Steve, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. Bill Left and Wendy Snyder with you. It's Thursday. Should be a good show. I know I say that every day, but today
I
mean it.
Some days we deliver, some days we don't.
Right. We'll try our best. We'll all do what we can to make it a pleasant experience, I promise you. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200.
A lot of storms last night. I was on high alert. I was sitting in the backyard watching the skies change from very dark to a little greenish to sun sort of coming out. I cannot sit in the house and relax. I feel like I have to be old Eagle Eye and sit out there and monitor the situation.
And what do you do with the knowledge once you've gathered it?
I just feel safer, like, looking and checking out the skies, seeing if I see any rotation in the air.
Yeah.
My son Dylan, who's 13, was out there with me, and he told me, "You're scaring me."
Oh.
I said, Mom is like a flight attendant. If you see me being nervous, run.
That's solid advice.
I swear, this was the first time I wasn't scared, I think because we've talked to Tom Skilling and Andy Avalos about these storms. Mm-hmm. I was prepared. I was ready. I had my flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest fear was I didn't want the power to go out because it was hot and muggy last night and I didn't want to be without AC.
Understandable. Very understandable. I thought it was interesting that all the major stations in town, 2, 5, 7, and 9, kept with the coverage all throughout. I mean, they didn't go to primetime programming.
Big Brother was postponed, for God's sake.
Big Brother was postponed. That's how serious this was last night. Sorry, Probst. We've got some
no,
wins and
Julie
rain.
Chen.
Is it Julie Chen?
Survivor's Probst.
Oh, Survivor's Probst. So I don't know if they cut back and forth between regular programming, but anytime I turned on a television at all last night, it was wall-to-wall coverage of the storm. Several people doing storm chasing, you know, where they get in a van.
Andy Avalos.
Andy,
did you hear
Andy,
him say?
I know Andy did.
He was going home to take a nap after he was on with us, and then he was going back to storm chase.
Yeah.
And his wife had some comments about that. What are you doing?
I know. I would say stay in the studio with the blue screen and the graphics. Don't get yourself in any trouble. It's not worth it. But, you know, that the game has been upped. Every station now wants to outdo the other stations and be right wherever the storm is. And that's what they were all doing last night.
My favorite was watching Tom Skilling's Facebook Live.
I know he's done that in the past, but what is that? He's just on Facebook while he's
with a video.
Yeah.
No, this was separate from the TV. There were various weather people who were doing this last night, but Skilling's the one I trust the most.
Yeah.
He's
the dean of weathercasting. He is.
Absolutely. So he just did, you know, you press your record on your Facebook account and you just can record anything at any time. And then people are commenting as he's doing it. And you people are just crazy. Tom, you are so hot. Oh, my God. Look at when he gets excited.
Is that what's going
on? He's trying to save our lives.
Wow.
You meanies.
Wow.
He did look hot.
I think it was Channel 7 that went back to like the Morris area. You know, that's where, because that's.
And Pawpaw.
Yeah.
Isn't that in Michigan?
I think there's more than one Pawpaw, I think.
Boy, he gets around.
No, he does. Yes, he does. I think there's more than one, but I'm trying to remember who they had out. I can't remember the man's name who was out there, but he couldn't get to where they needed to go because there was down power lines.
Oh.
So that was a side story. They, you know, they have little side. It's like Game of Thrones. There were dragons. There were topless ladies. But in the end, well, good always wins in the end. Wendy, you know that.
Well, I should be watching the television coverage. I do get my alerts from WGN Radio, from the International Weather Service. So
yeah.
I get alerts on my phone when something is weird and heading our way so I can be prepared. But I don't know. I don't want to watch the TV. I want to watch what's going on in my neighborhood.
That's better, isn't it?
Because that's what I need to know.
There was, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, how all of a sudden you get colors that you're not accustomed to. By us, this would be around 7:30-ish. It was a weird grayish yellow.
Yeah.
Did you get the same thing?
But I didn't
thing?
Have the green, and I was trying to explain to Dylan. He goes, "It's kind of yellow." I said, "I think that's because the sun's still up."
Mm-hmm.
When it gets like pea green, it's like a dark gray, black, green,
it's an awful
yellow
color.
It's you really know when you see it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we were very fortunate, and I know you were by you as well. We did get a lot of rain, and there was quite a bit of lightning and everything, and that was about the extent of it for us. But then as I'd watch other channels, I'd see people in other areas, and it was really, really a bad night.
Text for you, Bill, from 630. Hey, old-timer. Fox 32 also had continuous coverage. Did you forget to mention Fox?
I'm trying to think. I know I didn't mention Fox, but I'm sure they had continuous coverage. I don't know why they weren't on my radar yesterday. I was just flipping back and forth between the others.
All right. Well, we will continue, but right now we go to the newsroom, Steve Bertrand.
I just want to update you on what's going on in Germany now. The officials in Germany are saying that the gunman in this theater shooting is dead, apparently shot dead by police, although that's not been discussed yet. They're saying, though, that the shooter is dead. At least 25 people injured in this shooting today in a town not far from Frankfurt in the western part of the country.
Thank you for keeping us up to date on that, and no need to turn away because we have you covered on all the news, all the breaking news, and we're going to continue talking storms. 312-981-7200. Were you affected by last night's storms? It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Even when you can't be there, they are. Chicago Tribune Sports Plus, with more coverage from more journalists than anywhere else in the city. Join now at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus.
I was on my perch last night, my upper deck.
Yeah.
Because I live at Wrigley.
Right, no.
And I was watching this. I was keeping my eyes to the skies, as they say to do during a storm. And I was just being prepared and watching, and thankfully not a bunch of activity going on in LaGrange, just a lot of rain.
Yeah.
But Eric has some interesting information. Hi, Eric.
Good morning, Bill and Wendy. I used to be on the fire department, and I had organized a storm spotter training class for, you know, our various fire stations. And it was really interesting. It was put on by the National Weather Service, and they came out and gave a seminar, a very basic seminar on what kind of clouds to look for that can turn into, you know, severe weather.
What did they tell you? What are the clouds?
Mammatus, cumulonimbus. I almost said a bad word. Cumulonimbus.
Those are the big puffy, fluffy ones. Aren't they?
Right. A cumulonimbus formation gets about 40, 50, 60,000 feet, and those are the ones that accompany really large thunderstorms.
So that's one of the keys. You look for those. That's instrumental in deciding what's coming your way.
Right. Now, accompanying a really severe thunderstorm is what they call, it's like a sheet of round, they look like black cotton balls in there. Those are called mammatus clouds, and that comes from the word mammary, believe it or not.
Get your mammograms.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly, the guy that coined that phrase
was a perv.
Exactly.
That's fine. Somebody's going to be one. It might as well be him.
So, right. So the guy that coined it. Go ahead.
I'm just curious, Eric, because this is right up Wendy's alley, or Tornado Alley in this case. Is this something that would be open to the public? Can anybody take these classes?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you could call the the National Weather Service or go online and find out when their classes are, because they usually hold them at, you know, various civic buildings, libraries, fire stations, and they usually are open to the public. And as I was about to say, a lot of the cloud names are based on Latin terms, so you pick up a little bit of Latin, you know, while you're in the class.
Right.
If you're interested. But they teach you the different, wind formations, like, you know, straight line winds and wall clouds and rotating wall clouds and what to look for. And I noticed you had mentioned green clouds. The green is actually hail that is being, like, reflected or refracted by sunlight. So, and that's not good. When you see really dark black green clouds, get ready.
You're in trouble.
Exactly.
And that's what I was out looking. I have to tell you, with all this new weather forecasting instruments and technology, I am not as freaky scared as I used
to be.
No, because we have so much warning.
Right.
I mean, you know, when there are thunderstorms that roll in and you get the weather alerts from the National Weather Service, it tells you it will be by this town at this time. So you are pretty much fully prepared.
Right.
Right. Right. If you have a place, you know, to get to, like a basement. I mean, unfortunately, I don't have a basement in my house. So
start digging.
Right. Exactly. Start digging. But I forgot what I was going to say. I was going to mention something else. Oh, the worst windstorm that I remember was I hit a very stout tree in the front yard. I remember seeing it get bent over to about a 30-degree angle.
Really?
And that was the only time I really got scared.
That would freak me out.
That is scary.
I'll stand out on the front porch and watch, you know, a storm roll through. But when I remember, you know, watching that, and when that tree bent over at a 30-degree angle, I was like, okay, time to get inside.
All bets are off.
All right, well, stay safe, Eric.
Eric, wait, one quick question before we let you go. These classes you're talking about are storm spotting, and there's a big difference, obviously, between that and storm chasing, right? Guys are
a very big difference. Okay. As a storm spotter, all you do is recognize, recognize what cloud formations are severe. Storm chasers are actually going out and chasing them.
And risking their lives for the footage.
I don't get that at all.
I mean, if you were a certified storm spotter and you saw, say, a rotation above your house, then, you know, you could call the weather service. They give you an 800 number and say, hey, I'm a storm spotter. I've got a rotating wall cloud directly above my head, and I live at such and such address.
Oh, I've never been certified for anything. I might do this.
Yeah. As I said, you can go online with the weather service's website.
All right, it's nws.org or something. Yeah. I'll find it.
Like NOAA Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
NOAA Chicago. Just Google that, and it'll take you to their website.
Cool. Thanks for the info, Eric. Stay safe out there, okay?
You too.
Bye, Eric. Thanks. I would have no desire. I know that people really get into this, but to find out where the danger zone is and get in your car, your van, or your truck and head out toward it, I don't understand it.
Bill, I barely make it through Splash Mountain. I'm not going to go chase a storm. But I'll tell you this. We go to this little beach club in Southern Illinois, and every year since I was growing up, we'll continue the story in a moment, but Steve Bertrand has some updates.
Yeah, and we've been here before, Bill and Wendy, but I need to back up quite a bit, frankly, on this story. In Germany, it had been widely reported that it was a mass shooting and that several people had been injured in that. In fact, certain news outlets are even tweeting things that conflict with each other. But it seems as if it was not nearly as bad as we originally feared. There was a gunman in a theater. And again, we continued, as I warned you earlier, this is preliminary. But this is the reporting now from ABC News that there was a gunman in a theater complex and that there was perhaps a shot fired, but by police. And that the gunman is dead. There were indeed several injuries in this incident, but it looks as if it came when the moviegoers tried to flee the scene. Perhaps there was tear gas used in this assault, perhaps I would say more likely by police than this man holed up inside. At any rate, it looks now as if the injuries were caused by tear gas, which is great news that they would be certainly much less severe. ABC News is saying that there was indeed an incident there and that the gunman has been shot dead by police. But as I said, you know, these stories, when they come so fast now in the age of social media, there were several Germany news outlets reporting very specifically things that perhaps may not now be the case. But we're going to continue to try to sort this out, and I'll have more coming up for you in the headlines.
Thanks, Steve. This is weird to say, but it's better to be inaccurate about the reports and have people still be alive.
Absolutely.
So let's hope that's the case.
And that's what happens with this breaking news. I mean, as Steve mentioned, reports are being filed, and that's why you have to check your sources, and we thank you for clarifying that, because it is good news.
Well, and I do, I mean,
better news.
Yeah, and, you know, when this comes up, you know, Twitter and everyone, it lights up. But,
sure.
You know, what I share with you is things that come from other news agencies.
Yeah.
Not from, you know, people just tweeting, you know, in their basement.
Right.
So we had German public TV, we had Reuters and others taking information that they had presumably confirmed, and then I was passing that on to you. So, you know, I try to be the best filter I can, but, you know, sometimes it just happens too fast.
What did I tell you yesterday off the air that we are lucky to have Steve Bertrand?
Wendy said that.
I really did. I didn't really want to tell you to your face, but, you know, a lot of times we sit around and goof around on the air and get paid for it. They haven't figured it out yet.
That's crazy.
But when breaking news happens, we really trust that you're going to cover it accurately and give us all the information, so no need to go anywhere else. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
And Steve will certainly keep us up to date on any news that happens, not just in Germany, but around the globe, whatever's going on. All right, we need to take a quick break. We'll get a full news report from Steve in just a little bit, and then a lot more on the show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Thank you, Steve. John Williams is without question one of Hollywood's most accomplished composers. His themes for Jaws, Superman, Star Wars, E.T., and Jurassic Park are widely recognized as some of the greatest in the history of cinema. It is an honor to talk to John Williams. Hello, John.
Wendy, help.
I can't help you, John. Can I just tell you, that's why I love working with Bill Leff, because you never know what's going to happen.
Whenever we do these interviews, and I always appreciate the opportunity to come on your show, I'm so hoping, like, God, Wendy can't be sick today. Wendy has to be there.
We get all these vitamins sent to us in the mail from Minnesota right before John's visits with us, and I never understand why.
I love listening to you on the radio, Bill, but you terrify me. I must say.
Thank you. Thanks,
John. You get used to him, John. You don't talk to him enough.
No,
on
it's
here.
Always good. It's always funny. I just
it's scary.
I feel lost.
Oh,
can
you
imagine like getting on a bus and he's behind the wheel? It's gonna be like, we're gonna die, but it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be good.
Actually, I'd get off that bus if I saw him.
I would too. I wouldn't be on that bus. How are you, John?
I'm good.
How's that Vibe Score app treating you? It's fun to play on.
Thank you for asking that. That's not why I wondered if I could kind of weasel in on your show here for a couple of minutes. But we do a segment on my Saturday show. We call it the Vibe Score, and it's that app that I promoted on your show about a year ago. And it's fun. It's one word, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E. You can download it on your iPhone, and away we go.
It's fun to see what's trending and what people think.
Yeah, and then scoring, too. So, you know, the new Christo art exhibit, the orange ribbon in the lake in Italy. Have you seen the picture of that? On a scale of 1 to 100, what do you give it? A President Trump or a President Clinton, 1 to 100. What's your vibe or feel for that? And so we feed people news and then ask them a scorable question at the end of each post. And then we review them on the Saturday show at 2:30, yeah.
Chicago time.
Chicago time. Do you find that stuff that's trending in one area? I mean, I know that everybody has their own local news, so whatever's happening locally is going to take precedent. But nationally, the big stories are kind of the big stories everywhere, aren't they?
I think so. I mean, I'm sitting here talking to you from Minnesota right now, but I do the Saturday show on WGN, and a lot of the big, you know, we don't talk about Rauner as much up here as you do.
Right.
You don't talk about fishing as much as we do up here. And we do. I mean, they talk about fishing in Minnesota.
10,000 lakes, John.
A lot. I mean, not just in passing, but it's just funny. You go to stores, gas stations, and they've got, you know, minnows just about everywhere.
They've started to have that around here in the suburbs as well.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, it's pretty unsettling to me when I go fill up the gas tank at a Shell station and see fresh bait.
Oh.
Because I didn't really think I was living out in the country.
You weren't planning on buying fresh bait.
But if I need it, I know where to go.
Right. Yeah.
And I just read somewhere that someone was using Cheetos as bait. Do you know about that in Minnesota?
I'm unaware of this phenomenon.
Maybe you should look that up and when you talk fishing on your Minnesota show.
Hey, then, don't you know? But the big stories, the national stories, yeah. You know, doggone it, everybody's talking about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and stuff happening in Orlando. It's kind of hard to break out of that cycle right now.
John, I've told Wendy this, that when I was doing stand-up and I would work in Minnesota, the people of Minnesota are so polite that they will never tell you they don't like anything. If there's something they don't like, they'll just go, oh, that's different. They'll never just straight out say, I don't like that.
That's kind of why, I probably shouldn't say this, but that's why I like doing talk radio in Chicago, because they'll just call in and go, hey, and then they'll just tell you how they feel.
Sure.
In fact, they'll call in on WGN and tell you how they feel. You ain't even asked.
Right.
We're here. I've got to really kind of coax it and say, okay, I'm going to take a commercial break. This is a talk show. Here's the phone number. God, I'll come to your house and bake you a pie. Just call. You don't have that trouble in the South suburbs. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
They're primed. So there is a different feel, I would say, even if the subjects are the same.
Yeah.
All right, so Vibe Score is cool. Check it out. You can get it at the App Store for Android, and it's regular. You can go Android now too. I know
No, it's still iOS. But can I ask you about my Roosevelt show too?
Yeah, that's what I was going to just switch gears.
Segway
so why don't you do it?
Well, this is something that we've done the last, gosh, we've done this every year, sometimes twice a year, for maybe 15, 20 years now on WGN, where we do a stage show. I come out and interview Thomas Jefferson or Teddy Roosevelt, and then the audience gets to ask questions. And I think this year it's really going to be interesting, don't you? I mean, funny, but also informative, because for obvious reasons, but if you want a bombastic bragger, that was Teddy Roosevelt. If you want a career politician, that was Teddy Roosevelt. He's sort of the best or worst of both worlds, you know?
John, I can't tell you, especially in this election cycle, the past several months, how badly I'd love to get inside the heads of everyone from our forefathers right up until politicians of 10, 15, and 20 years ago to see what they make of this. And this is a great chance to do just that.
Well, that's what it is. So the gentleman who portrays Thomas Jefferson, famous for, you know, famously with me, I mean, he was the principal interview in the Ken Burns documentary about Thomas Jefferson. He is America's number one scholar on Jefferson. He's memorized more Jefferson than Jefferson. So he knows this stuff. But that guy is just as committed to Teddy Roosevelt. So he comes on stage, sometimes with kind of the tuxedo top hat sort of look, like the Monopoly man, and then other times like a Rough Rider with the chaps and the cowboy hat. But it's Roosevelt, and he's loud and he's positive, and he says, hey, you know, I feel fit as a fiddle. Let's go on a hike. That's kind of the attitude you get. And then it's just one amazing story after another. But with some perspective, people will say, well, do you think we should be involved in Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever, and immigration? And he'll give you the Rooseveltian perspective on that.
I have a question that I would like you to ask him for me.
What's that?
Is he jealous of Alexander Hamilton?
Isn't that a great question?
I think they all should be. And so we're doing this show. So the Roosevelt show is in August. And then Jefferson comes to town the weekend before the election in November. Well, Hamilton will still be running.
Oh, yeah.
So I got a mind to put Jefferson in costume and just go get tickets or stand in queue, you know, just and look really ticked off, you know, the whole time.
That's
and
a good idea.
And then squawk about $800 a ticket. This is outrageous.
$8,000.
Yeah, yeah. So Lord knows Chicago will be thinking presidential stuff starting August and moving forward.
The show, The Return of Teddy Roosevelt, is on August the 13th, but tickets are going on sale next week, right? Is that on Tuesday?
Tuesday the 28th. Go to WGNradio.com/events. In fact, if you just Google Teddy Roosevelt news right now, the first thing is Justin Kaufman's talking about it last night.
Oh, good.
How does that happen? So I don't know who's doing search engine optimization to WGN, but props to them for that. But yeah, if you go to WGNradio.com/events, there's a description of it. It's going to be at 10 a.m. on Saturday the 13th at the College of DuPage. You can't buy tickets yet, but we just wanted to circle your calendar the 28th, because that's when you go there, you will be able to buy tickets, and it always sells out, sometimes in an hour. So by all means, come see the show and be ready to jump on them on Tuesday.
The reason I bring up Alexander Hamilton is obviously yesterday the tickets went on sale, and we were trying to find out more about Alexander Hamilton. And Bill, do you remember when I read one of the facts, and it's like Theodore Roosevelt was a big fan, and he was referred to as Telescope Teddy.
Right.
Why is that? Do you know, John?
No. Telescope Teddy?
Yeah. I mean, I know that Teddy Bear was named after Theodore Roosevelt, because when I worked at Brookfield Zoo, there's the Roosevelt Memorial Fountain.
Yeah.
And the Teddy Bear was named after him. That was in my script.
I know that he was mocked or made fun of as a young man for his glasses. He wore really thick glasses. In fact, he was eventually blinded in one eye during a boxing match with an army soldier. He was president of the United States. He loved to get a good workout. And so he said, send up one of your best fighters. And they go, all right. And then the guy's sparring with him. And he says, oh, come on, hit me. He hit him, detached his retina, and he was blind for the rest of his life in one eye.
Wow.
Imagine Barack Obama or, you know, George Bush doing that. And the guy pows him in the face and blinds the president, the sitting president. That's what happened to Roosevelt. He wore really thick glasses, so maybe it's a reference to that.
I actually found it. This speak softly and carry a big stick president got this nickname, Telescope Teddy.
For spying on neighbors.
For checking out Mrs. Johnson, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Johnson being
about.
The operative word. When he got this nickname, went out west in 1900, he had all of his rifles fitted with small telescopes for long distance shooting, in addition to his very thick glasses.
Ah, wow! Hey, well, now you know something I don't.
How about that?
He's a very his stories, really, you guys. I mean, San Juan Hill, his adventures out west, his the way he became president. I mean, you worried about Hillary or Donald becoming president. McKinley got assassinated. He was the vice president at the time, but they thought when McKinley got elected, they said your job is to live for 8 years, and then he gets killed, and yeah. Roosevelt's president, and they're all slapping their foreheads going, oh, no, this cowboy is president. We're screwed. Turns out we were okay, but you never know. You never know. So he's that character.
It's such a great story. It's the return of Teddy Roosevelt. Tickets are going to go on sale next Tuesday. That's June the 28th, and the best way to do that again, John, is?
Yeah, just go to WGNradio.com/events, bookmark it, or make a note now, because the 28th is when you'll be able to buy them. These shows, you will cry when he talks about sending his sons into combat and then being shot down in World War I, but you'll laugh your fool head off, too, and you'll get a real sense of what a great president can be, and it's fun. It's really fun.
And then, John, I sent you a couple of emails about you interviewing me as Sacagawea, but I did not get a return email on those. Are you still thinking about that?
I got to be honest with you, Bill. I gave you a fake email address.
Oh, you did.
A preemptive strike there from John Williams.
So you just keep typing away, buddy, because I appreciate the ideas.
Sure.
Great to talk to you, and when are you on this Saturday?
I don't know.
Is it 1 to 3? I want to say one to three. All right,
good. 1 to 3. 1 to 3. So thanks for some time. Keep doing the good work. I love your show when I hear it, and thanks for letting me plug mine.
Absolutely. Thanks. Right back at you. It's John Williams, everybody. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. That proves how crazy Kaplan is. A sane person would spell it with a C. This guy's insane.
Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
All right. We were talking to John Williams about Theodore Roosevelt. Or do you say Roosevelt? Because I think I actually say Roosevelt.
I go back and forth.
You know what? I might, too.
I do.
I say Roosevelt Road, but when I'm talking presidents, I
President
go Roosevelt,
Roosevelt.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, they named the teddy bear after him. That I know.
Yeah, they did.
I believe we are going live to Steve Bertrand. Thank you so much, Steve. I didn't know what this was in reference to. So, yeah, tie vote, as Steve said, by the Supreme Court. Some interesting things on immigration. What happens now, though? It's a tie vote. He's speaking out about it. Does he get...
Well, I think one of the things he wanted to stress was that the Dreamers from 4 years ago are not impacted by this. The people... But if you remember, when he came through with this policy, there was encouragement for people to come forward and to sign up begin this process. And there was fear then among those people that should a subsequent president or someone else rescind this process, and in this case it might be done by a court, that these people would have signed documents saying that they're here illegally and that they could expose them. So there will be some effort now to assuage those fears. And this is not a done issue. The Supreme Court, by a tie vote, does not set a national precedent. What it does is reverts to the lower court ruling. So now we have an appellate court knocking this down and the Supreme Court refusing to take action either way.
And
so,
Steve,
this will go to the next administration.
This plays out differently if the Supreme Court is at full strength.
Well,
we're one judge down right now, so that it becomes a different story if we're at full strength. Right.
Right. And so that's an interesting question, Bill, because who we are missing is Antonin Scalia. Had Scalia been alive today, he likely would have voted against the president's policy. At least that's my understanding.
Sure.
Had Merrick Garland been confirmed, he may well have decided in favor of the president's policy. We don't know.
Either way, it would have broken the tie.
This goes now to the fact that this is a very important election upcoming, because there will be Supreme Court justices chosen by the next president.
Yeah.
Wow, the plot thickens, doesn't it?
Sure. All right, thanks, Steve.
And we were talking about Teddy Roosevelt and his nickname, Telescope Teddy, because he had all of his rifles fitted with small telescopes. I'm curious to think what Barack Obama's nickname is going to be. later on in yours. I do have a bunch of nicknames of former presidents, and can I quiz you on these?
Oh, absolutely.
We'll do that after news?
All right, yeah. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
My fellow Americans, I would like to sing you a little song, and let me see if I can remember it off the top of my head. Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Adams, Jackson, Van Buren, Harrison, Tyler, Polk, Taylor, Fillmore, Pierce, and Buchanan.
That's beautiful.
Lincoln, Johnson, oh. Grant, Hayes, Garfield, Arthur, Cleveland, Harrison, Cleveland, McKinley, Roosevelt, Taft, Wilson, Harding, and Coolidge.
Loses a little something in the second verse, but still beautiful.
Bring it home, sister.
Yep.
Hoover, Roosevelt, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford.
Ford?
That's how it's written here on Pinterest. Right. Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, and Obama.
That's stunningly beautiful.
It's been an addition in the last few years.
Yeah, song got longer.
Yes, and obviously that was not from the top of my head, but there are kids that know that,
which
is really cute.
Yeah.
We were talking about nicknames and Telescope Teddy because he had sights on his rifles put on so he could help. He had bad eyes, evidently, and just vision in one eye, according to John Williams.
I had never heard any of that.
No.
I didn't know any of that.
So I wanted to quiz both you and Steve on presidential nicknames.
All right.
We can go way back.
To prehistoric times.
Let's go Thomas Jefferson.
President of our country.
Nickname.
Oh.
Big Bad Tom.
Close.
Is that close?
Long Tom.
Long Tom. Are you allowed to say why? Is it best that we not know?
Yes, I am, Bill. Funny
why
you
was
mentioned
he called,
that.
Why was Thomas Jefferson called Long Tom?
At 6'2.5", Jefferson was 6 inches taller than the average height for men in his days, which earned him the nickname Long Tom.
Long Tom.
Not the nickname.
I know. Shush it.
Well, we don't know, though. It was a long time ago.
All
Who
right.
knows?
There are some other doozies, if I may. Andrew Jackson.
Hickory, Old Hickory. Old Hickory.
I think Old Hickory is correct, isn't it?
That is one of them, but according to mentalfloss.com, Sharp Knife.
Sharp Knife.
Native Americans bestowed this nickname for his fighting tactics.
Yeah. Mm. Yep, Sharp Knife.
What about like Andy or Drew?
Was he ever called Andy or Drew?
Wasn't popular then.
He was called a lot of things.
This one should be near and dear to your heart because your best friend in the whole wide world's nickname is this,
well,
too.
Grant Mulvey?
Yes. William Henry Harrison.
His nickname was Grant Mulvey.
Best friend?
Old Granny.
Old Granny.
They call
well, that
Grant
is,
Mulvin
yeah, Grant
Granny.
Mulvey is Granny, right.
Mulvin?
I don't know.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know.
The Granny nickname got thrown around a lot back in the day. In Harrison's case, Democrat detractors, including Van Buren, gave the 68-year-old this nickname to get across the idea that he was both ancient and out of touch.
Well, also, Harrison used to knit and have hard candies. He always had a bowl of hard candies somewhere near him.
Don't forget the rocking chair.
Right. Always had a rocking chair.
All right. You're going to feel guilty. He came down with a cold 3 weeks after his inauguration. It turned into pneumonia and pleurisy, and he died soon after. He was the first president to die in office.
You know why? Someone
he didn't wear a jacket at the inauguration.
Also, someone took the Afghan off his rocking chair.
Yeah, that's
true. He should have knitted himself a sweater.
If only there were time. He ran out of time.
How about James Buchanan?
The cannon.
The Buker.
They called Buchanan the cannon.
10 Cent Jimmy.
10 Cent Jimmy?
I love this one, you guys. The Bachelor president got this unflattering nickname after he said that 10 cents a day was a fair wage for manual laborers.
Oh. Yeah,
10 Cent Jimmy.
That seems fair. Even back then, you couldn't survive on 10 cents a day. 10 cents a day.
I know. Abraham Lincoln. I know you're going to go Honest Abe.
Yeah, there's some. I mean, we all know that one.
This
the
one?
Penny, the guy in the penny.
1 cent Linky.
Vampire Slayer.
Vampire Slayer.
1 cent Linky is
great. I'm changing it. I'm sending this to Mental Floss. 1 cent Linky?
Yeah, that all was right, his nickname.
Like
it's got to start somewhere.
No, but this is weird. He is a weird dude. They should have done a play on Lincoln instead of Hamilton.
Oh, there have been plays on Lincoln, but he...
The Grand Wrestler.
Mm, really?
Did you know that Honest Abe was a wrestler? He's even been inducted into the Wrestling Hall of Fame with someone else who just entered prison.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis Hastert.
Yeah, Dennis Hastert's in there, too, right. I don't remember any tales of his wrestling prowess.
I'm wondering what his finishing move was. Are we talking like professional wrestling or professional wrestling?
Just random wrestling.
Professional.
I don't think he would get elected today because he was not easy on the eyes.
And well, look
back
at Nixon.
Then, I guess so. But back then, nobody. I mean, there were drawings of him in the newspapers and stuff, but you didn't see him. Like now, you have access to him on television all the time.
It's like, ooh, Mr. President.
Actually, Abraham Lincoln, you would expect to see in the Guinness Book of World Records for something.
For something, right. Right.
He was kind of an odd-looking fellow.
Yeah.
All right, what about Chester
Arthur? Chester
Arthur?
Oh, don't fish that one, no.
You already...
Just the school kids called
him
that.
Was it Chester the Molester?
No.
Everybody's thinking it. Is that what it was?
This cracks me up. It was Dude President.
What?
Sometimes called America's first gentleman, our 21st president got another nickname, Dude President, because of his sense of style.
I didn't know that.
Who? Dude was used back then?
So if I ran for president, I couldn't use that?
No. It's already been taken, Kevin. Chester A. Arthur was the Dude President.
Isn't that funny?
Wow.
How about Stephen Grover Cleveland?
There was no such president.
Stephen was his first name.
Grover
really?
Cleveland.
Yeah. Stephen Grover Cleveland. He went by his middle name.
The Muppet.
He chose Grover over Stephen?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
Come
Stephen
on.
Stephen is, I know you're a
too
Stephen.
Too common.
But it's too common.
He wanted to be remembered, so Grover.
Right. He named himself after a Muppet.
Grover
the Muppets
Cleveland.
Weren't around then.
What?
People knew.
They were coming.
All right. His nickname was Uncle Jumbo.
You know why?
Oh, no.
Yep. The only president to serve two non-consecutive terms tipped the scales at 250 pounds, so it's no wonder he earned the nickname Uncle Jumbo.
And he liked footlongs.
It's possible. He was the 22nd and the 24th president. Am I correct? Does that sound right? Does it say?
He was what?
22nd and 24th. I know there was a guy. One guy was in between them.
I don't know. I don't have the list.
All right.
You just sang the list.
I'm not going back to my Pinterest page.
All right.
William McKinley. This is my favorite.
The Terminator.
Mount.
Was that right? Did Steve get it?
Can we take a break and come back?
Yeah. All right. Stick around, everybody.
I like Bertrand's better,
quite honestly. Steve's great at this. You'll find out what McKinley's nickname is. No other station's giving you this information. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. If you're headed north, you better bring a big appetite. Finding great eats in the Badger State. That's Cruisin' Wisconsin tonight on WGN TV News at 9.
All right, we were talking about nicknames of the presidential candidates, and they're kind of explained to us, even though I have to be honest, I haven't heard of many of these.
I don't think I've heard of, like, one or two came up, but that's it.
This from mentalfloss.com, William McKinley, his nickname, Bill, Wobbly Willie.
Wobbly Willie.
Who really
this
called him that?
Before he was president or during his presidency?
McKinley earned this nickname for his reluctance to enter into a war with Spain in 1898 over Cuba. Theodore Roosevelt, then the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, said that McKinley, quote, had no more backbone than a chocolate eclair.
Them's fighting words back then.
Big time. And then they got into a duel.
You would have if somebody said that, you would have a duel with them.
We have another one. George W. Bush. This isn't the original recipe.
No, that's not original recipe. That's the new version of Bush.
Oh, that's right. Extra crispy.
What would his be?
G-Dub.
Is it G-Dub? Is that what it is?
That's too cool.
G-W.
It's his nickname, Shrub. Here's why.
It's obviously a play on Bush.
Right.
It's a smaller Bush, so it's a shrub, right?
A nickname given to the president by liberal columnist Molly Ivins, who went to high school with him.
Zing.
Hey, Shrub.
She took care of him.
That's really funny. And Barack Obama.
The llama.
That's a good one because he's tall and lanky like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
If I ever have a cartoon show with animals who are presidents, one of them is going to be Barack Olama. That's one of them.
You're a genius,
Bill. I got to think of more, though.
Barry Obamer.
All right. There's a lot of people who, instead of calling him Barack, call him Barry. Because I guess for a while, he used that as his name. Right?
This is the nickname. It was given to number 43 by his high school basketball crew for his jump shot.
Oh, really?
Barry Obomer.
Yeah. All right. That one's not terrible.
Yeah, but it's weirder when you're a president with that name.
Right.
On the basketball court, a little different.
It holds up better. You're right. Those years are probably better suited to that nickname.
And we learned today from mentalfloss.com that Abe Lincoln's nickname, in addition to Honest Abe, was the Wrestler,
mm-hmm.
and that he's in the Wrestling Hall of Fame. 1 cent Linky was not. That's what Steve Bertrand
suggested.
That's
my favorite one. That's by far my favorite one.
Hi, Larry. What else do you know about Abraham Lincoln's wrestling career?
Yeah, his mother was a wrestler also. She wrestled to make the 1 cent every time she beat the guy, she'd get a penny.
But wait, because...
Wait, did you just groan at your own joke?
What's that?
Did you just groan at your own joke?
Well, I thought it was pretty good. No, she did wrestle.
She did. Mrs. Lincoln. Abe Lincoln's mom.
Mrs. Lincoln, mom, mommy dearest, she wrestled also.
And that is what they said back then, wrestling.
Wrestling.
Well, I don't know what they called it. I don't remember that far back.
And Abe would come to watch her wrestle, and then whoever sat behind him couldn't see the match. They'd complain the whole time. Take the hat off. I'm trying to watch your mom wrestle. Wrestle.
Yeah, take your hat off.
I would have liked to have seen Abe's mom, the first mom,
yeah.
wrestle Barbara
Bush.
She was
a big woman, according to what I read. She was a very, very tall woman.
Did Abe look more like his mom or his dad? Do we know?
Oh, I think he looked like his cousin George.
Larry, how many shows at Zanies are you at this weekend? Bye.
Thanks, Larry.
God.
He's our go-to guy for any wrestling humor. We go to Larry. Did you see the movie a couple of years ago where Daniel Day-Lewis was Abe Lincoln?
I did not see it, but I saw trailers for it, and he looked just like him, didn't he?
He looked like him, and then historians have said that he sounded like him.
Very low voice.
No, actually not. Like,
was he a high talker?
Yeah, like you wouldn't have imagined that. You would have think the way that Abraham Lincoln looked, and almost every time he's portrayed, he's got a much deeper, more resonant voice. But in this one, Daniel Day-Lewis, I guess, did enough research to figure out he's got kind of a squeaky voice. So that's the voice he used as Abe Lincoln. But I couldn't stand that movie. Like everything that you would think would be in a movie about Abraham Lincoln, like the assassination.
That was left out intentionally.
That wasn't
in
it.
So this was pre-assassination. Good question, Wendy.
Most of the movie, yes, is pre-assassination. Somebody did a joke about it, and I don't remember who, that it's the story of Abraham Lincoln told in real time because it just moves so slowly.
Really?
And, like, honestly, every key thing that you knew about Lincoln and wanted to see is kind of left out of the movie. I wanted so much more in my Lincoln movie.
You didn't like it?
I liked Kevin was making a joke. There's a movie the same year called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter or Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
That was a more entertaining movie than the Abraham Lincoln movie, to me anyway.
Is it worth my time seeing the Daniel Day-Lewis one, honestly?
No. I know a lot of people loved it, and I like history. I'm not nuts about history, but I didn't walk away knowing a whole lot more, and it left out, like I said, the things I wanted to see. They weren't in the movie at all.
Did you like JFK? Was that Oliver Stone's?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
I loved that.
Yeah, although I've been told by people who know way more than about the story than I do,
not
that
accurate.
It was yeah that they really they
Joe
messed
Pesci
with it a little bit.
Was really good in that.
Everybody was really good.
Everybody
in it.
Was. You're right. Hey, Steven, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. We're talking about nicknames for presidents, which John Williams started probably an hour ago.
Yeah.
Right.
You have an idea?
Well, I don't have any good ideas, but when President Trump wins, I want to know what you guys think his nickname will be.
Not for air. That's his nickname. Old Not for
Steven,
Air.
Steven, I am a little fearful. And again, everyone should vote with what they feel is the right decision, but I'm a little fearful he is going to be President Trump.
So what do you think his nickname will be?
The Trumpoline.
The Trumpoline?
Yes.
Why would that be?
Because our country will go up and down.
Well, obviously, doing that now.
Well, are you? I can't tell if you're a Trump fan or not.
No, I am. I am. I am. But like I said, I don't have any good ones. I was trying to think of some while I was waiting on hold for you guys, but I was just wondering what you guys think his nickname will be.
The Old Wall Builder.
These aren't that catchy.
The greatest wall builder.
Like the exterminator?
Yes, the exterminator.
Why are you voting for him? I just want to know, Stephen. Give me three reasons. And I'm not criticizing. I'm just, I want to learn. I'm curious. Three reasons.
One, I think the people of America, and I'm speaking, I say people of America, but I'm speaking my own opinion. We're tired of the politics, the natural politics that goes on. In my opinion, there shouldn't be career politicians. They should do, you know, two terms and that's it, whether regardless of president, the House of Representatives, the Senate.
Can I say I agree with you on that one? I do. I kind of agree with you on that one.
Okay. I do like the fact, now, I don't think we should just, I think we should button up the walls, the country's borders until, like he said, we do find out what is going on. I understand that this country was built on immigrations, people coming here from all different countries, all different facets, all different religions, but we need to also protect what we have here now. And we need to find out exactly what is going on that is creating all this extreme terrorism that's going on. And until that happens, we need to shut down the borders and make sure that we're safe and then let people come here, you know, as long as they're going to do it legally.
Do you agree with the wall?
My train of thought here.
Do you agree with the wall?
You know, I like the fact the wall, I don't think it's feasible.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
It really is. I don't understand what good a wall is going to do when all the tunnels for immigration and drugs is coming underground.
Right. Right.
Is it feasible? Probably not. But I do like beefing up our borders.
You know what? This is spoken like someone who's really thought about it. So cast your vote and may the best man or woman win.
Vote for Orange Bird.
Right. Actually, I'm going to write in Oriole Samuelson.
That's not a bad move.
I'd vote for him.
That's
he would win
move.
Hands down.
Stephen, thanks.
And someone has a nickname for you before we let you go. How about Tiny Hands Trump?
Tiny Hands Trump.
Tiny Hands Trump. Nice.
All
nice.
Right. Thank you, Stephen.
Beautiful. All right, we need to take a break. We've got news coming up in just a little bit, and then we have a lot more for you. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Thanks, everybody, for texting in with nicknames for Trump should he become president. My favorite so far, Humpty Trumpty.
Trumpolian.
That one's not bad either. All right. It's news time. It's just past 11:30. This news report is sponsored by Crazy Kaplan's Fireworks. Here's Kim Gordon. Patrick McDonald is here. Patrick is a film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. He's the chief guide for ChicagoFilmTour.com.
Yes.
Right? That's how people get that. 312-593-4455 if you'd like to call in. How are you?
We'll be running on Saturday this weekend. Because of the Gay Pride Parade on Sunday, we won't be running. So that's
shifted gears just a little bit for
there
the day.
You go.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
Be
good.
Crowded downtown, yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It's too much. It's too much. You can't get through anything. So,
Patrick, really quickly, I wanted to talk about this young actor who died in a freak car accident.
Yes.
Anton Yelchin.
Yes. You know, I met him in 2011 when he brought his film Like Crazy to the Chicago International Film Festival. And here was a guy who immigrated from Russia with his parents, who were both figure skaters, interestingly enough. And he was so optimistic. You know, he had just played the iconic character Chekhov in the Star Trek movie at that point.
Was he a good Chekhov?
Yeah.
Yes, he was excellent. Yeah. They made him like a math nerd, you know,
which was cool.
So he would figure out calculations to try to get. I love the first reboot. The second one I'm not as thrilled with, and I'm very happy that Simon Pegg wrote the screenplay for the upcoming Star Trek Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
As a Trekker from way back. But yes, he was just such an interesting guy because he had lived several lifetimes in one lifetime.
Yeah.
So, you know, the magic age, 27. You
so
know.
Sad.
It's so sad. Oh.
The movie you just referred to, Like Crazy,
yes.
I think is one of the most important love stories. It's a small independent film.
Yes.
But it's so
honest.
So optimistic in some parts, not a lot,
right.
and so negative and sadly realistic in other parts. And I know a lot of people haven't seen it. but it's worth searching out like crazy. The girl in that Felicity Jones,
yes,
British actress who's in the new one of the new Star Wars movies.
Right.
Is this the movie you were telling me about that you liked so
yeah,
much?
Yeah, it's such a good movie.
There's
a couple
great.
Of love stories the last couple of years. A few with Michelle Williams, who if she's ever in a love story, you know it's going to be a roller coaster ride. It's not going to end happy. It just doesn't. But that movie, Like Crazy, was one of my favorite movies the year it came
out. That's interesting because, you know, the complexities of love are such that it is complicated, even if it seems like they're made for each other. You know, there's always in private a lot of complications, as we well know in our veteran status.
Sure. Of course. Absolutely. And also, you have to put him in that level. I know he wasn't a household name, far
yet.
From it.
Right.
He really wasn't.
He was going to be, everyone says.
I think so.
I think he's one of those guys that as time went on and they figured out exactly what to do with him.
Right.
And Heath Ledger is kind of that same thing.
Amen.
Right.
Boy, that's a great comparison between those two. Yeah.
So sad.
It was so freakish, too. I mean, it could happen to anybody, basically.
And wasn't he married to Michelle Williams? Or
was that... Yeah, Heath was living with her.
Oh,
had a child with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, gossip.
There's a new Wolfman.
Yes.
Finally.
Wolfman Jack?
If I'm lying, I'm dying.
Can I tell you, I saw a picture of George Clooney, and if they ever do a Wolfman Jack story,
he should. Be good.
Yeah, because he's gray now, and those eyebrows, he really looks like
Wolfman
a young
Jack.
Wolfman Jack.
Yeah. I love Wolfman Jack in American Graffiti. Remember him in American Graffiti? Oh, especially when he took the curtain down at the end. You know?
It was great.
Wolfman, this is the Universal Monster franchise. They're trying to revive it. And apparently the rumor is Dwayne The Rock Johnson will become Wolfman in the next resurrection of this Universal Monsters universe, if you will.
Now, the last few times they've tried the Wolfman, I think Benicio del Toro was the last one they tried full-fledged.
Yes.
And there was one with Nicholson and James Spader that wasn't very good.
Right.
The last several, until you go back to Lon Chaney, really have not been very good. Why keep trying?
Right. And I think the thing, if you make the Wolfman too realistic, it kind of kills the whole nature of it. I mean, you know, the Lon Chaney Jr. ones were so good because, you know, it looked like a Wolfman, like a combination. But you knew there was some sort of fakery involved, you know?
Teen Wolf was the best.
Teen Wolf was actually...
It was
Teen
a
Wolf
good movie.
Is great.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. Michael J. Fox?
And American Werewolf in London.
No,
that
good,
is
though.
A really
that's
good
awesome.
Movie.
And Wolfen is okay with Albert Finney. Did you ever see Wolfen?
Yes.
That one's pretty good.
Yes, very good.
There have been a couple of incarnations that have worked. But, you know, when we were kids, Universal had the big four.
Yes.
Frankenstein, the Frankenstein monster, Dracula, mm-hmm. the mummy, and the Wolfman. And I don't know. They just can't seem to get it right.
Well, this is part of our tour, but you know that Universal has roots in Chicago. Carl Laemmle was a dry goods salesman from Wisconsin. He came down to Chicago, saw people lined up in the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
So he developed a chain of Nickelodeons in Chicago in a distribution business. And investors in New York said, let's go after Edison. So in 1912, Universal Studios was filmed with
Carl
Laemmle.
And they did all right.
They did all right.
Yeah.
And Carl Laemmle Jr. was actually the guy who presented all the Universal monsters. So you see his name. You know, the old
really?
Joke. The old joke back then is, because he liked to hire his relatives, Carl Laemmle, he has a big family. That killed him in 1912.
Sure.
I tell that joke all the time on the tour, so anybody who took the tour knows that one.
Do the big four, the big Universal four, do they stack up at all today with the movie monsters? You know, everybody from Freddy Krueger to Jason Voorhees to the guy from Saw to anybody
my opinion is they got more realistic and they could show more blood. Kind of the fantasy element of the monsters were taken out. You remember Creature Features?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that... Just the music of that still evokes a childhood sense of wonder at those Universal monsters. And
genuinely scary, right?
Yeah,
not
genuinely.
Just slasher movies, not just let's see how many pieces we can chop somebody into, but real fear.
Right.
But scary in your own mind, because it wasn't so accurate, but If it was, that's harder to watch for me.
Well, yeah. After Creature Features was over, it's like midnight. You're not scared that the Wolfman's outside because it's just so total fantasy. But if you watch, you know, A Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, that's psychological fear. You know?
But and my friends, we would always talk about your classic horror film, Monsters, mm-hmm. and The Mummy was the one that always made us laugh because he moved at such a slow pace that even if you saw him coming...
You had to get away.
Yeah, you always had time to get away.
Well, same with Night of the Living Dead. Those zombies were so slow.
Right. Just creeping along. Yeah.
That has changed during The Walking Dead. They didn't get you.
Well, and also, too, I also, you know, like Asimov's rule of robots, we should have a rule of zombies because they keep changing it every time
we see a
new zombie movie.
That's so true. Patrick McDonald is here. HollywoodChicago.com is his website and ChicagoFilmTour.com.
Yep.
Stick around. We'll talk about what movies are coming out next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Patrick McDonald is here. He's a film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com. Great website. He also runs the Chicago Film Tours. Go to ChicagoFilmTour.com. This upcoming week, no Sunday tour. It's a Saturday tour. 312-593-4455 if you want to give them a call.
10:30 and 12:30.
10:30 and 12:30.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, we were discussing this movie, Lincoln, earlier.
Yes.
You're a fan of the movie.
I am.
Several people texted in and said, I need to realize it was not about Abraham Lincoln. It was about what was going on at the time.
Right.
The 13th Amendment, I believe.
The 13th Amendment was going
on. Based on a book.
It is based, but the movie's called Lincoln. So it does plays a major role in the story. You liked it a lot. You thought that was a great film.
Yeah, you got to put the star out front. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I like procedural stuff in history. And, you know, this could blend into our next discussion because Free State of Jones was much about, you know, not so much the main character played by Matthew McConaughey, but the whole atmosphere of the post the Civil War and the Reconstruction era. So,
what does that title mean? I don't know what it means.
It means that the county in Mississippi was declared a free state, away from the Confederacy, away from the Union, because McConaughey's character felt like it was a rich man's war. So he wasn't going to fight a rich man's war as a Southerner.
Right.
And he was going to recruit, you know, the runaway slaves and you know, the people who were kind of marginalized by that war, which is very much current in our modern society.
And to tie it all in, Patrick, McConaughey drives a Lincoln.
Oh, you are all right today.
It just all ties in, doesn't it? How does this movie hold up? Did you like it?
Yes, I did. 4 out of 5. It's a very much a history lesson. Now, had you seen Seabiscuit, the movie Seabiscuit? Same director, Gary Ross. He's very, very meticulous on how he tells his stories.
Mm-hmm.
He did the screenplay as well for Free State of Jones. So I felt it moved a little slowly in the middle, but once it caught up, it was really, I mean, it's a vital history lesson for everybody, I think, and especially in the times we live in. So,
Matthew McConaughey has been on a streak the last 3 or 4 mm-hmm. years where he's really been at the top of his game. He's been so good lately. This one continues the streak?
Yes, he's amazing in it. He doesn't overplay this character at all. He treats the character with respect, but he tries to make him human as well. So I was really impressed with McConaughey.
It's so funny for a guy who's become something of a caricature at times.
Mm-hmm.
When he gets the right part,
right,
and he's directed properly, and it's a good movie,
he's amazing.
He can be so good.
Yeah, it's really something.
All right, all right, all right. All right.
Does he say that in the movie once or twice?
Yeah, I hope so.
I hope he does too.
I don't remember.
I hope he does. Now, here's something a little bit alarming. One of the movies that people are projecting as being one of the biggest movies of the summer is the sequel to Independence Day.
Yes.
And that comes out Friday.
And
right,
it was
tomorrow?
Not previewed for the critics.
Uh-oh.
So,
that's
warning.
That's a bad
warning.
Sign.
Seriously, for us common folk, what does that mean, really, that they're not confident enough for it to get good reviews, so they just don't let people see it?
Right. They don't want any negative reviews. It's a franchise. You know, it's Independence Day. We're going to look at that campy cult movie from 20 years ago.
Loved it.
Yeah, there you go. So you're looking for the sequel, and then the people who love that movie are looking for the sequel. They don't, and it doesn't need to be critiqued. You know, essentially.
Well, it's almost critic proof, isn't
yes.
it? The people who are going to see it, every
right.
critic in America could say this is just awful, and
exactly.
they'll do well.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you got it.
But
who
stars
in should
that?
Be working at the studio. Yes.
Who stars in that?
I think they're bringing back Bill Pullman and
he was great.
the apartment.com guy.
Who's that?
As I like to refer to him.
The apartment.com guy.
Oh, Jeff Goldblum,
Jeff
you mean?
Goldblum.
Yeah, he's in it again. Brent Spiner, I think, is in it again.
Okay, yeah. I mean, they're bringing back certain people, but they're not bringing back Will Smith.
Because what was he offered it?
Jada
and turned
wouldn't
it down?
Let him.
Is that what happened?
Jada would
Since
not
she
let
wasn't
him.
Offered us a role in it, she said, "You better not
Nobody's
do it.
Nobody's in it.
Or don't even come home tonight."
She said that?
Yep.
I met Jada last year. So.
Was she nice?
Yeah, she is very nice. She used to be in a metal band, so I'm all good with rock and roll.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty notable, too. It had some L.A. cred, if you will.
And the name of the band? See, I should know that when he doesn't offer the name up.
So. Yeah, he doesn't know?
Yeah.
That happens. That's right.
That's what happens when you see 150 movies a year.
All right, so the big two this weekend.
Wicked Wisdom? Was that it? Would you know it if you heard it?
That sounds good.
That's the name
that
of the
sounds
band?
Right.
Wicked, Kevin, the producer, is also a musician. So
all right.
He follows us.
All right, all right, all right.
Independence Day sequel comes out Friday and Free State of Jones. But there's one or two smaller films also coming out.
The Neon Demon. This is the guy who directed Drive, Nicholas Winding Refn.
And, I'm sorry.
Are you speaking English?
Yes, I am.
You said that backwards.
Nicholas Winding Refn.
You sounded like the little person from Twin Peaks right there.
You gave a man's name backwards, Patrick. Kevin, could you play what Patrick said?
Twin Peaks reference. Backwards. Awesome.
We'll figure out his name.
Elle Fanning is the star of this. She plays a naive girl from the sticks who comes to L.A. to be a model. And,
I saw your picture on Facebook with her.
Yes. She's 18. Come on.
No, right. I didn't say it that way. I got to interview her.
Yes, I did. And she was very, very interesting and intelligent. In fact, loved my mother's hometown of Weirton, West Virginia, when she filmed Super 8 there.
Oh, nice.
I think she was reincarnated from somebody there because that's a mill town. It's basically a steel mill and a city. It's not really the most impressive place in the world, but she loved it. So.
She's the younger sister of Dakota Fanning.
That is correct.
Who's all but vanished. I know she's done one or two movies in the last 4 or 5 years. But
what was she known for?
Oh, boy.
Gosh.
Sam I Am or I Am Sam? Is
well,
that what it's called?
You know, in fact, in Sam I Am Sam. Yes. She, Elle played herself.
The younger version.
Yes.
Right.
So that's how she, at 3 years old, that's how she got her start. So.
But she's a pretty good actress. I like her work. She does well.
She's very naturalistic. Super 8 is tremendous because of her.
Yeah.
I think she steals that movie.
Yeah.
And Tickled. Have you heard about this?
Oh, wait. Is that the documentary?
Yes.
I do know about this. Tell Wendy. Wait till you hear about this.
Down the rabbit hole, Wendy. This is about tickling competition in the U.S.
I cannot watch this.
And it is set up by a shadowy figure within the U.S. And a journalist tracks this entity down.
But the story is they were going to make a documentary about tickling, about the competitions. But then they find out about this guy, and that becomes the focus, right?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, it's sort of an entity, a corporation, and who's behind it. That's the key. I did interview the director of it, and it was quite interesting because it was without Watergate.
Really?
So, yeah.
I might have to see it now.
It's really good.
But you know, the tickling parts are very uncomfortable. You just want them to stop.
All right, then I can't see it. I hate tickling. Tickling should be outlawed. Okay. Jump on that, Trump.
make that a priority.
Yes. I'll vote for you then.
Patrick, thank you very much. Patrick McDonald's websites, again, are HollywoodChicago.com, and then he is the chief guide over Chicago Film Tour. Go to ChicagoFilmTour.com for all your
quickly,
information.
Quickly, my band, the Telepaths, will be playing July 2nd at Phyllis's Musical Inn, July 15th at Sylvie's in North Center.
So. Very good. Thanks, Patrick. Mm-hmm. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has coming up next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox! Let's go, go, go!
What a tear the White Sox have been on of late.
How are the Cubbies doing?
It's a rough couple of days. Very rough couple of days. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff. It's her, Wendy Snyder, here to enlighten you and entertain you, or one or the other. We'll see what happens. The White Sox did a really nice job.
Are they 3 in a row?
Yeah, they beat the Boston Red Sox 3 in a row, and they're playing now.
How are the Cubs doing?
The Cubs are having a great season,
but recently.
The last three have been not good, not good.
I'm just so sick of the Cubs getting all the attention in this town.
Well, this year, I have to say, it's kind of warranted. They have the best record in baseball.
This year, but every other year.
Even in years that the Cubs have not done well, they still get the bulk of the attention. There's no question about it.
I know I tease you, and I didn't believe you when you said you are a fan of both teams, but really, you're the only person I've met who really is a fan of both teams.
I've always
honestly.
Been. Thank you for recognizing that. I was very fortunate as a child. My dad worked for a company that had season tickets to both the Cubs and the White Sox, and we would go to both. I mean, whoever was in town, we would go to the Cubs games or the White Sox games. I didn't favor one over the other then. I don't favor one over the other now. I watch a lot of baseball, and I've told you this before. It's twice as hard to be a fan of both teams because if you're a fan of one team, when your team is out, you feel bad, but I get it twice a year.
So you will admit over the course of the last several 30-plus years,
yeah,
the White Sox are not getting the attention that the Cubs do.
There's no question about
it.
See,
that just doesn't seem fair.
The Cubs get so much more attention. Even there have been times where something amazing happens in a game for the White Sox or a series. They'll be on a roll, and the lead story from almost every news source is always, even if, like a day like today, the Cubs aren't even playing, and it'll be, well, the Cubs had an off day today, and over on the south side.
See, it's just, we're an afterthought, and I don't like it, so I need to point something out that I found on the old internet.
All right.
A new study says White Sox fans, smarter than Cubs fans.
Oh, that's interesting. What are they basing that on?
Oh, I have the information.
All right.
I have the information. Now, are you going to consider yourself a Sox fan during this little segment?
During this segment, I am a full-fledged White Sox fan. Yes.
According to Jeff Foster of the Wall Street Journal, Chicago White Sox fans are a little smarter. I'm going to take that little out, but right. Are a little smarter than Chicago Cubs fans when it comes to discussing their teams online. The study was made by the automated proofreading company Grammarly.
Yeah.
Which concluded that the New York Mets have the dumbest fans in all of baseball in the major league.
Based on, again...
All right. The study was essentially evaluating the grammar and spelling by fans using comments on each team's official site.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is. And, you know, with autocorrect these days, shame on you if you have a typo. Although sometimes Siri puts the wrong word for me.
Oh, yeah, I can see where that would happen.
But Grammarly used the same methodology for all the Major League Baseball teams. It reviewed 150 reader comments from the news section of each team's website. 10,592 total words on average per team. Mets fans had the most errors, making 13.9 mistakes per 100 words.
Oh, no.
I know.
That's serious. That's awful.
All right. There's a swear word here. I have to care. Cubs fans averaged 5.2 errors per 100 words,
right.
Which is, it's better.
And that's just, that's strictly a misspelling of the word? It's not out of context? It's not dumb ideas?
Grammar and spelling.
All right, so grammar and spelling
dumb ideas
combined.
They're not taking into account.
That doesn't count. All
it's
right.
Just if you use the wrong there or the wrong to.
Yeah.
So here we go. MLB, all their websites, the comments. Mets fans, 13.9 mistakes per 100 words. Cubs fans averaged 5.2 errors per 100 words. And the number one, the smartest of the fans with the comments, White Sox fans, it's really close, 4.8 mistakes per 100 words.
Huh?
According to the study, White Sox fans make the third fewest mistakes among all Major League Baseball
all right.
fans.
That's good. That's great news.
Let me get you the top ones here.
All right. I can't even guess based just on grammar and word usage. It's too hard to guess.
What do you mean?
Like, if you were doing every team in baseball and said smartest fans, dumbest fans, just based on this, I wouldn't be able to figure it out. Like, if you said, just give me a room full of fans of each team and let me talk to them, then I'd be able to figure it out. But
oh,
just
I'd give a math test, a constitution test.
All right.
Because, quite honestly, no one is as anal as I am when it's an email or a text or definitely a comment I'm leaving online somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I proofread that thing 100 times because if you're trying to make a point and you misspell something or use the wrong word,
you're setting yourself
you
up.
You screwed yourself.
Right.
No
sure.
one's. They're going to just make fun of your grammar errors instead of what your idea is.
But what I'm saying is, like, when I first heard about this survey, I thought it would be based on how much education they had or how many of them are doctors or lawyers, that kind of thing. It's just interesting they would use this as the criteria as spelling errors, but I guess that makes sense.
It's probably not a really valid study, but it's interesting. And it probably isn't true because you know who the smartest of the MLB fans are?
Who would it be?
Indians fans.
All right.
Yeah. They had 3.6 mistakes for 100 words.
That's very good.
Padres in number two, 4.4 mistakes out of 100 words.
Yeah.
Then you get your White Sox 4.8, Cubs 5.2, and the dumbest fans in the world are Phillies fans.
Yeah.
Is it Phillies? Did I say that? Oh, no, Mets. I'm sorry. 13.9 mistakes per 100 words.
Incredibly high. Very high number.
I don't want to start a war, but I think it's starting.
You know what happens, though, Liz? I would also argue that a lot of true baseball fans don't really troll the websites.
Like, well, no, that's what they're saying. Read the comments. Many trolls from other teams, so that isn't a true test.
Right. If you want to go to somebody's website and complain about that team, then you shouldn't be counted as that team's fan because you're not. You're a detractor.
And then someone has just texted me, 872 WATT, what? AURRUYOO, taking about.
Oh.
You got about right, so that's good.
So is that a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan?
I can't decide.
Not sure.
Probably a Mets fan. That's what I would guess. 815 says that's just Cubs fans phonetically dumbing their comments down so White Sox fans can read them.
Wow.
Ooh.
That hurts
and
a little
here
bit.
It comes.
That hurts just a little.
Not possible. Most Sox fans can't read.
No. But you have to admit, because you by far favor the White Sox to the Cubs, although you
I don't
were
like
very polite. You were extremely polite last year.
You guys
year
were so close.
The Cubs, right?
They were so close, I wanted to see it happen, Bill, because I just felt at that point we already have a World Series under our belt, albeit, what, 2005?
It's been a couple of years, right?
I thought it was your turn.
Yeah. But now, would you admit that the Cubs fans are painted as a more affluent bunch? The White Sox fans are usually painted, not always, but usually, as a little bit more
blue collar,
rougher around the edges. Yeah. You admit
that's
that,
accurate.
Right? That's fairly true. Yeah.
That's totally true. I mean, because look where the ballparks are if you live in close proximity. Although, the young kids who live in Wrigleyville, how can they afford those apartments? So, really, are they rich? They spend all their money on rent.
I wouldn't say rich. Far from rich, probably.
But how, I mean, rent near Wrigley Field
is a lot more expensive than if you found a place near White Sox Park, right?
True. Hi, Dave.
Hey, well, first of all, there's usually like 12 guys per an apartment in that neighborhood.
There is that, too, yeah.
All right, good point.
Secondly, Wendy has the best laugh in the city of Chicago.
Can't argue that.
Thank you.
Bill is, he played an Indians fan in a movie, and I'm thinking that has to be, you know, he's a smart guy. So I'm with that.
Well, thank you. That was all acting. Strictly acting.
All right, then.
Major League and Major League 2, you can check out Bill Leff.
Yep.
Not 3, though, huh?
Didn't do 3.
I'm the drum, right?
Yep, that's me. That's absolutely me.
Yeah, you're the best. Love you guys.
Thanks,
Dave.
That was
the best caller ever because we both got complimented.
And I should point out that while I was playing the drums in both Major League and Major League 2, J.K. Simmons was off screen yelling at me, screaming at me at the way I was playing the drums. So what you saw was half acting and half fear.
Well, now if he yelled at you, you'd really
now
be afraid.
I'd be very afraid.
All right. Well, an interesting little study, according to Jeff Foster of the Wall Street Journal, and the company Grammarly put this together. Kind of an interesting way to figure out who has the smartest fans.
I don't know
if it's accurate, but cute little way.
And a quick baseball update. The White Sox are winning right now, and James Shields, who has been giving up more runs than Montezuma's Revenge, is actually pitching very well for a change. So that's nice to see. All right, we'll take a quick break. More show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. What's that number again?
I don't know, Bill.
All right.
Once I do something, it's gone.
It's passed.
Again, we have just learned that Sox fans are slightly, and I hate to admit this, but slightly smarter than Cubs fans. Grammarly.com conducted a little survey, and they went to the comments pages on all of the Major League Baseball team websites.
Right.
And they counted the mistakes, either grammatically or spelling.
Theoretically? Oh, spelling mistakes? Yeah.
Grammar and spelling.
Yeah.
And it turns out that the dumbest Major League Baseball fans are the Mets fans. They made 13.9 mistakes per 100 words. That's pretty high.
That's extremely high. That's embarrassingly high.
Let's see who the next...
Like, I could see a random mistake every now and then, but how many ways can you spell suck wrong?
There's S-U-X.
Only, I guess you could if you put your mind to it.
But see, now that's not fair either, because if you do that to save time, look at the kids texting today. You know, you shorten every word.
Right.
So I don't know if this is really fair, but someone has texted. The White Sox fans had 4.8 mistakes per 100 words. Cubs fans, 5.2. But in addition to the Mets fans, the Phillies fans are pretty dumb, too.
Yeah.
13.5 words.
Now, you knew that this would get people riled up a little bit. Cubs fans taking shots at the White Sox. White Sox fans taking shots at the Cubs. That's inevitable.
Can I tell you, though, typically the fans, the Sox get it way worse than the Cubs, the Sox fans. Like somebody saying, not just blue collar, they're hillbillies, but
right.
There's a swear word in front of it.
Oh.
And then
nobody put, I'm surprised White Sox fans even know 100 words. There was nothing like that.
Yeah, we got a couple of those. Remember before the break, I said somebody texted, you know, this is not accurate because White Sox fans can't read.
Right.
But finally, 224 says, or 219 says, how do you get a Cubs fan off your porch?
How do you get a Cubs fan off your porch?
Pay him for the pizza.
That's funny.
I do love these. Someone said it's the stupidest survey I ever heard, but it must be a Cubs fan because they spelled stupidest wrong.
Oh.
And I had mentioned that, you know, the kids living near Wrigley Field, it's all of their rent.
It's a fairly expensive place to live.
But someone suggested that, you know, there are 12 guys living together or you've got a bunch of roommates.
Mm-hmm.
And someone says that... You know as well as I do, their parents are paying for the rent. I don't know that that's true.
It's possible, I guess.
All right. Somebody's got a problem with this survey. Got a problem with it, Derek?
Yeah. So they say the Sox fans are smarter, but there's less of them to make mistakes.
You know what? I hate to admit that
you're
right.
You know that's true. There's a lot more Cubs fans than there are White Sox fans. It's just that way.
Because it's easy to say you're a Cubs fan.
I'm a fan of both teams, but I hope they both win unless they're playing the Cubs, and then I hope they lose.
You know that on almost any given day, the Cubs are sold out no matter what happens. Even on years where they're in fifth place, Wrigley is sold out, and then the White Sox can be in first place, as they were earlier in the season, struggling like crazy to get people in the doors.
A Cubs game is like going to see Hamilton. You want to go because everybody else is going.
Right.
I mean, I was just in Orlando, and our cab driver, oh, you're from Chicago? How about those Cubs? I'm like, I don't care about the Cubs. What about the White Sox? Oh, yeah.
Out of my cab.
It's always an afterthought.
Right.
But you're right. It's not very full at Sox Park, ever. Yeah. Opening day, really not even this year.
I know. Thank you, Derek. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Have a great day.
Go teams.
Go teams.
Too.
That's unity. Can't we all just get along? All right, we'll take a quick break and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I guess I realized it was the House and not the Senate. Isn't Paul Ryan the Speaker of the House?
Yes, he is.
And he couldn't control a sit-in that was going on. And I was seeing all the footage and all the posts about this, and this has never happened before, has it?
No, not that I'm aware of. It kind of was a takeover of the House. I mean, the Democrats went to the well. They shouted down the speaker at one point, and then they just sat there and said they were going to stay seated until they got some action. I don't know if they're talking now. Former Speaker, the House Majority Leader, House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi is talking. I don't know how they're going to claim victory here, but they certainly raised awareness and I think probably built some political support for themselves.
So what happens next, Steve, do you think?
Well, the Senate looks like it's going to move to vote on a compromise bill put together by Susan Collins. She's a Republican senator from Maine.
Yeah.
I saw something to that effect maybe later this week. So that could be movement there.
Sorry for interrupting, but do they know what the compromise bill would contain? Just by virtue of its name, compromise, it's a little bit of each side, but do we know exactly where they'll stand on it?
I think it has a little more to do with, you know, and it's a very legitimate question, the idea that, you know, can the government prohibit you from doing something without giving you any chance to appeal it?
Right.
That sort of is contrary to a lot of what we stand for. So they were trying to figure out a way to allow for some due process for someone who might be on a no-fly zone or no-fly list to appeal being rejected for a gun purchase. That's probably what some of the compromise has to do with.
Doesn't it seem to make sense if we're not going to trust you enough to fly, why should you have a gun?
You would think.
It's almost laughable. I mean, I'm sorry, but it's if you're not allowed to fly because we think you're a danger.
Exactly.
And you know, what I don't understand, because I personally completely understand the due process concern, but there doesn't seem to be that when it comes to the no-fly zone. Although I think maybe you can appeal that to
the no-fly list.
The no-fly list, yeah. You should be able to appeal that and get off of it if it's mistaken or if there was an error or something.
You would imagine
like
there's some way.
How do you get on it? Just if you've had priors or?
I think if they identify you as someone who's worrisome or some by association, I mean, it's well short of a crime. It's just a suspicion that they can put you on that.
Yeah. And that's what this was about, basically, was if you could be, you should be off of both or on both lists, correct? Is this the gist of it?
It's no fly, no buy. That's the shorthand for it. So if you're on the no fly zone, I keep saying zone, I'm sorry. If you're on the no fly list, you should also be prohibited from buying a gun. Or if you do buy one, the FBI should be notified. Or you can appeal it. You know, that's where they're trying to figure it out.
Why is this a Democrat-Republican thing? Could someone please explain this to me?
Three letters.
NRA?
I think so,
but,
yes.
Yeah.
Coming back, the NRA.
But for anybody who debates back and forth whether the NRA is funding politicians, this is all the proof you need, isn't it? Does anyone need any more proof than this?
No. And, you know, and what's fascinating is, the money or it's not just money, it's the threat, you know, that they could put someone up against someone.
Yeah.
So it's not like maybe that they're, you know, giving all kinds of money to a senator, but it could be if you cross us, we're going to give all kinds of money to your opponent.
Yeah.
But most of the measures and the different incarnations have pretty widespread public support. I mean, the polling on them shows that, you know, most Americans do favor background checks. They do favor closing the private sale loophole.
Politicians, instead of listening to their constituents who want the change, they're more concerned about their own job security than they are anything else.
In a word, yes.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how this is able to happen.
It's very upsetting. It's beyond upsetting.
I mean, can't there be, you know, a no-fly list, a no-gun list, and a no-lobbying list? I mean, it seems completely unfair that just because you're given money, you have to listen to
But think of it this way. I mean, say that, you know, you are under suspicion for one reason or another, and the government, without telling you why, says that all of a sudden, you know, you can't go to the House of Blues. And you try to go to the House, and you're like, well, what's this about? How did this happen?
But if they're questioning me about something, then I've done something wrong, probably.
It's not always being questioned, though, Wendy. That's the point. I mean, they could be saying, well, this person is talking to this person quite a bit. We have reason to be concerned about this person, so we're going to put them on the list. They don't call you up and say, hey, you're on the no-fly list, because, you know, in many cases, you might be under investigation, and they don't want to blow that.
I guess.
So there should be a check. I mean, the government shouldn't be able to just declare that you can't do something without having to offer some sort of proof of that or argue over it. And I think that's where they're trying to sort it out. I keep going back to the idea, though, that, you know, you can't, you know, you, Wendy, cannot bring a bottle of shampoo on the plane tomorrow, but someone who's declared too dangerous to fly can go to Walmart or wherever and buy a gun. It's
in balance.
It doesn't fit. It's out of balance, yeah.
Hi, Bill. Did you have a comment or question?
Yeah. Where do you find the no-fly list? Is it even published out there anywhere? Is there a way to get a hold of it? Or even people that were on it from the past?
You find out about it, I think, now, Bill, unless I'm mistaken, when you try to buy an airline ticket. You know, it's not in the country's interest for us to tell everyone who's on the list that they're on the list, because maybe they're under active investigation or they're under surveillance. You know, you don't want to tip them off that the government or the investigators are on to them.
Yeah, but here's my question. Say you go to buy a ticket and they say, sorry, Wendy, you can't buy a ticket because you're on the no-fly zone. And I'm going to investigate and say, well, why? And does somebody interview you then and see if you should be on it?
You know, I'll have to look that up. I thought when it first came up that there were people who were mistakenly on it and there was a method for
that
them to
get off of it. That has happened, Steve,
yeah.
a bit.
Quite and
a
I'll
bit.
Bet it continues to happen.
Sure. Yeah.
But then if I go to try and buy a gun and they say, no, we can't let you because you're on the no-fly list, then I'm going to go, what the heck am I doing on the no-fly list?
Right.
I got to get to the bottom of this, but at least pauses things.
Well, but that's the point. So the opponents of one of the bills would say that you should have some sort of redress to argue to get off of the list.
And that's valid.
And that's fine.
Seems to be, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Bill, I'm sorry. I thought I'm the only one who just doesn't understand this at all. But thank you for your question. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I know I sound like an idiot, but it just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. And how can this be like this?
You're going to Jeff, right?
No, I will.
Okay, go to Jeff eventually because he fits into something we were just saying. But
Mike, hang on. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, my son, when he was 14 years old, he's 25 now, but my wife worked for United. Every time we'd show up for a flight, even though she was an employee, he was on the no-fly list because his name was similar to that of somebody else
who was on the no-fly list. I understand that.
How and we would have to walk around, get managers to come and release him. And to this day, they still look at him. They take his ticket back, look at it, come back. Okay, there's no getting around it. You just.
So would that process take a while? How long of a process once you're at the airport and they realize this is a 14-year-old kid, he's not a danger? How long would that process take before you were clear to fly?
It could take like an hour.
Really?
We always planned on it, so.
All right, but what if there's some kid who is 14 years old and is a son of a terrorist, and they you can't just let a 14-year-old go without investigating it?
He does have a FOID card, though. I just, I don't know if he applied now, would he be allowed to get it, or?
Oh, maybe. I wonder.
Yeah, so that's a perfect example.
Yeah.
If the gun shop says, well, you're on this list, then he should be able to go somewhere and say, look, this has been a mistake since I was 14. Give me the gun.
Right.
And that seems fair. If, we all have to give up a little bit of convenience to have this world be a safer place, don't you think?
But the birth date of the guy was like 1970. My son was born in 1992. Yeah,
Similar name.
Yeah.
That's it.
On the other side of the coin, Jeff, don't you like that they're paying attention and they actually recognize the name that's on a no-fly list? Doesn't that make you feel a little better, even though it's kind of a hassle for you?
Yes. Sometimes it is. He's blonde hair, blue eyed kid, so it kind of doesn't fit the racial profile, but it's
didn't seem to matter
over there, I guess. Right.
Wow. Wow.
Well, how do you know terrorists are not using blonde haired, blue eyed kids? Seriously.
One of these Dutch terrorist cells that you hear about.
It's a good way to get them through, isn't it? I'm giving
so.
Them ideas, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
Jeff, thank you so much.
Way to go.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, quick break, and then can we talk to Mike?
Yeah. Mike, stay there. Everybody stay there. We'll get to your calls next, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. World's greatest nap.
Oh, I love naps, man. Yeah. I really do. All right, we're talking about the sit-in that was going on the House floor. And how long did it last? 20-some hours? 20...
I think 25 hours,
Five hours.
Just over a day, I believe.
And listener Jeff just called in, and he was saying how his son has the same name of someone on a no-fly list, albeit a different birth date.
Right.
But they get hassled a lot. My question is, you go to the airport, they say, oh, you're on the no-fly list. There should be someone that you can talk to say, okay, do what you need to do, interview me, let's get this over with. I am mistakenly on this list.
Right.
And then it's handled once and for all.
You would think. That
Same
makes sense.
Same thing, you go to buy a gun and you say, they say, you can't get a gun because you're on the no-fly list. Really? I'm on the no-fly list? Why? I didn't do anything. Go be interviewed. There has to be some agency or some person that can interview you. And then they say, oh, this was done in error, cleared.
Yeah.
Next. I mean, what is the
that
problem
seems
with
easy.
This?
I don't know.
All right, Mike was on hold, so let's talk to Mike here. I don't get this. Do you, Mike?
I do, but you're not going to like my answer.
All right. Well, hey, we'll listen to it.
The basic problem is that under the Second Amendment, you have a right to own a firearm. Okay?
Right.
Let's accept that for true.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, when the no-fly list was instituted following 9/11, the courts routinely ruled that you do not have a constitutional right to get on an airplane.
I'm okay with that.
So the problem is you cannot abrogate a constitutional right without providing due process. So you have to have due process before you can abrogate the constitutional right.
All right, you're using big words that I don't get, Mike. Come on.
You can't defeat the Constitution. That would be like saying, I'm going to use an analogy, and that's always a suspect argument. It's like, you shouldn't be allowed to vote until you demonstrate that you are, you can at least read.
Yeah.
Okay. They said no. You have an absolute. The Supreme Court said no. You've got an absolute right to vote, no matter whether you're literate or not. So you can't deny someone a constitutional right until after you've afforded them due process. So by saying you can't get a gun if you're on the no-fly list. Then you. And by the way, there are a number of lists. There's a no-fly list. There's a terrorist watch list, and there are at least two other lists that I'm aware of that the government maintains on people who have, for some reason, are suspect.
Because they pack too many ounces of liquid. I think there's a list for that too.
Interestingly enough, Ted Kennedy was on the no-fly list. He could not fly commercial in the United States.
Did he need to? Didn't he have a private Kennedy plane?
That doesn't matter. He couldn't get on one. He
For
was
what
on the
reason?
No-fly list. See, that's the fun part, is the government is not obligated to tell you why you're on the no-fly list. So you cannot, in essence, refute it because you don't know what the basis is. And because it's not a constitutional right to fly, there is no right to due process in order to have that ability to get on an airplane suspended. You have a right to travel, but not to travel on an airplane.
I have to say, I not only get it.
I don't get it.
Part of me, it makes sense because then the government gets to regulate in a case like this where there are potential dangers to other people flying. They can just use the Constitution to their advantage that says, show me where in the Constitution it says we have to let you on an airplane. We don't.
That's pretty much it.
I get that. All right, I understand.
Mike, Wendy, like you, you're on a button fly list because of the jeans you wear, so you know what that's like.
Mike, thank you for making sense out of this. I just don't understand why we can't give up a few things to make the world a safer place.
It's not a question of giving up a few things to make the world a safer place. It's will giving up those things make it a safer place, given the fact that there's no indication that putting additional restraints on people would result in fewer guns being sold, especially in light of the fact that a lot of the firearms that are being used, say, in Chicago for gun violence are purchased illegally.
Right. I get that. But what about the guy in Orlando who purchased them legally?
He had an absolute right to do so because he had not been adjudicated of anything.
Then we have the right to die.
As a matter of fact, the government had investigated and decided there was no basis to deny him anything.
You just can't. We've said this before. It's impossible to predict based on his or any other's prior behavior
of what's going to happen.
This guy had a lot of.
I know.
There were a lot of indicators that there were problems with this guy, but nothing that would ever indicate he would do what he did.
Absolutely. And one of the other interesting little foibles of gun law is that criminals can't be required to register their firearms. There's a Supreme Court case that says you cannot make a criminal register their firearm because possession of a firearm by a convicted felon is a crime in and of itself, and it violates their Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Who lobbied for that?
Nobody. It was a guy who was convicted of failure to register a firearm, and his argument was through his attorney that
he'd be hanging himself
required to do so because it would violate his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. And it went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, you're absolutely right. And one of the interesting things about this is every time people talk about common sense gun laws, they only apply to people who obey the law.
Sure,
they
of course.
They don't apply to people who are disobeying the law.
Mike, in the instance you just mentioned, is it worded as criminal? Does it say criminals don't need to...
It says convicted felon.
Oh, it does.
But see, now when you say that out loud, Mike, in my little pea-sized brain, it says, okay, these were things that were in there originally, but they need to be updated.
Amended?
Yeah. Don't you think?
The point is...
See, you're scared to answer now, because you don't want an amendment in there about guns.
The issue is not... The issue has always been one of enforcement. The Northern District of Illinois, the U.S. Attorney's Office, even though there are federal laws on the books that prohibit possession, and I'm not talking ownership, I'm talking about possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, no one in the Northern District of Illinois Eastern Division has ever been charged under that statute by the U.S. Attorney's Office here in the Northern District of Illinois. No one.
Mike, what do you do that makes you know all this stuff?
I'm a lawyer.
Oh, you are.
I'm also surprising. A gun owner and a firearms instructor.
All right.
Oh, well, good for you. I guess two out of the three.
Well, so just to give you an update now, you know, I've been telling you about this bipartisan bill from Susan Collins, a Republican from Maine.
Yeah.
It's had its first test vote in the Senate today, and it received a majority of votes, 52 votes.
All right.
It needs 60 to avoid a filibuster, right?
Yeah.
So it didn't get that yet. A Republican measure pushed by Ron Johnson from just over the border here in Wisconsin only got 31 votes. So now they will work toward getting those final 8 votes they need to make it filibuster-proof.
Interesting. All right. Mike, thank you. A lot of good knowledge. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mike. I still don't get it. I mean, I get it, but
yeah,
I feel like, you know.
Well, because it seems like it's common sense, and it gets back to, I hate to blame this on the NRA, but what we said is kind of true. It's proof positive of what everybody suspects, which is so many politicians would put the good of the country behind their own job security, and that should be a crime. That's awful.
That should be a crime. And there needs to be amendments to the Constitution, don't you think?
Oh, without a doubt,
so,
sure.
Why could there be one and not a... I don't know. I don't understand it.
I know.
All right. We have to take a break.
Yeah, break. News is next and then more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Storms are past us. It's pretty nice out there today.
Yeah. I mean, after what we saw yesterday, you think about it, this isn't even a day later and it's business as usual. It sure didn't look like this last night. So
those tornadoes scare the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I know with good reason, but boy, you just don't know when they're coming.
Right.
Beware.
Since we're talking politics, I wanted to bring up a name that most people will not be familiar with.
Rush Limbaugh?
No, I think most people are probably familiar with him. Speaking of storms and destruction.
Storm Phillips.
Yes. What about him? What about Storm Phillips?
Oh, wait, it's Stone Phillips, isn't it?
Should be Storm Phillips.
Should be his brother.
Do you know the name Rick Tyler, anybody? Anybody know Rick Tyler?
Absolutely.
Isn't this a great story, Steve? Are you familiar with Rick?
Is this the former Cruz aide?
No.
Oh,
I don't know this guy.
This is a different guy. Rick Tyler is a candidate for Tennessee's 3rd District Congressional District seat. He is running for office with this platform. He's a candidate for Congress, and he's running on... Now, keep in mind, Donald Trump is doing pretty well, I would say, with his slogan, Make America Great Again.
Right.
That's his slogan, Make America Great Again. Rick Tyler, who wants to be a congressman in the state of Tennessee, has his own slogan, Make America White Again. He's got billboards, he's got pamphlets, he's got a website that all show extremely happy white people doing what extremely happy white people do, smiling. Some of them are hanging out together. Some of them are by themselves. One of them has a horse, which is great. Make America White Again.
The white man has a horse.
Right. But the problem is when they said to Rick Tyler, hey, your campaign there is kind of racist with that Make America White Again, he doesn't understand why. He can't understand why anybody would question
he's lying.
His policy.
How could he not understand why?
I don't know.
Is there a large black population in Tennessee?
Yeah.
Then how yeah. can he not know why?
Yeah. A candidate for Congress, this is in USA Today, today. A candidate for Congress is under fire for a campaign sign highlighting his hope of making America white again. Again, according to USA Today. Rick Tyler, candidate for Tennessee's 3rd District Congressional District seat, I told you that, has been under scrutiny for his billboard, which is located in Benton, Tennessee. And then there's a picture of it. A lot of white people smiling. A candidate for Congress is under fire for a campaign whose sign highlights his hope of, and I quote, making America white again. The sign, which appeared over Highway 411 near Benton, Tennessee, was placed there by independent candidate Rick Tyler, currently running for that seat. While the sign may seem racist, Tyler told the news station that it was not meant to be.
How could you not mean it to be that?
Well, he'll describe it, and you tell me if you're buying Rick Tyler's argument or not. Spoiler alert, I'm not. He says that the sign is a call to take America back to the 1960s, to Ozzie and Harriet, and Leave It to Beaver time, when there were no break-ins, no violent crimes, and no mass immigration. Now, to his point, there were few, if any, black people in Ozzie and Harriet or Leave It to Beaver, but I think there were some in the 60s. I believe that we had black people in the 60s.
I get where he's coming from, but it's not Make America White Again.
Right.
It's Make America Innocent Again, or...
Right.
He's just justifying it.
Oh, right. Man. Right. But do you think...
Before it's too late.
It's too late.
Right. Add that
it's
on.
It's too late when the first billboard went up.
Right.
No, I'm saying, you know, there was a famous mayoral campaign here where, you know... Bernie Epton, before it's too late.
Oh, that was his slogan, wasn't it?
It was one of them, yeah.
Wasn't it? But even that, at its most pointed, didn't come close to Make America White
no,
Again.
No, it was a little more nuanced.
All right, if you're going to run, if you've decided that's your platform, that's your campaign slogan, you almost have to defend it, and not in a poor way of saying, I love Ozzie and Harriet. I'm just hoping that we can make America more Ozzie and Harriet-like. This has nothing to do with race. But the word white is in, Make America White Again says, let's hearken back to a time when white people ruled everything. Wasn't that a grand time? If you're going to own it, you got to own it. You can't backtrack and go, no, I meant the Cleavers. I meant the Nelsons. I didn't mean anything by it. I wasn't going for racist.
Look, this is what's wrong with this world.
That's why we need to make America white again, Wendy.
Oh,
when there were
God.
No break-ins and no violent crimes.
I think the Beavers household got robbed once.
Was there an episode where they got robbed? I didn't
remember. Eddie Haskell did it.
Did he steal some stuff? Where was Larry Mondello during this? You know he had to have a hand in this.
He was hanging with Lumpy.
Lumpy Rutherford?
Clarence Lumpy Rutherford.
A quick note. We tried our best to have Rick Tyler on. Kevin made some calls and emails.
He won't talk to us? What?
He would not talk to us. And I swear to you, it wasn't going to be anywhere near an ambush interview.
We just wanted to
know how making America white again would be good for Tennessee and for the world. And also, I wanted to play Ozzie and Harriet trivia with him. But he was too busy. See, Make America Great Again, America's pretty great. America is a pretty great place. It really is. Does it have its faults? Absolutely. Lots and lots of faults. But I would say America is a pretty great country. I can't think of another country I'd rather live in than this one with all of its faults. So that phrase, you know, is fine in most respects.
Except,
Make America White Again is extremely disturbing to me.
And Make America Great Again is egotistical and... You know what? It's not great now. I don't like that either. Make America better. Can't we say that? Not great again.
Except then you're taking out, here's what's missing from that, the fear that you need to have. You have to have some kind of fear factor in there. America used to be great. Let's make it great again.
Fear factor is Donald Trump's name on the ballot. That's what I'm afraid of.
I understand. I get it.
I really am.
I know. All right. Do we have time for a call or two? Can we get a call or two in?
Let's talk to Cheryl. Hey, Cheryl.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great.
I would love to ask this joker, who's white? Because I'm white, but I have Eastern European background.
Right.
So who's white?
Well, I would say
definition.
Any of the people you saw in either Ozzie and Harriet or Leave It to Beaver or in the 1960s, they would be white.
And we're sure none of them were immigrants.
No.
See, Cheryl, this would suck in so many ways because we'd have to start wearing beehive hairdos and skirts more often and aprons.
Right.
We'd have to bake cookies.
I mean, I think that's a little idealistic view. Of course there were break-ins in the 60s, but there was YouTube and Facebook and all these things that show it instantly and all this media attention that we have now. Like, I mean, yes, it might have been a more innocent time, but don't tell me there wasn't crime back in the 60s.
It was without a doubt a more innocent time. You can't even argue that. It was an innocent time until you got into the Vietnam War era, and then the innocence was lost a little bit. But having a guy like Rick Tyler who says, make America white again, that's not going to make the country any better. I can't imagine a scenario where that makes the country a better place. It just doesn't.
Are we sure that he didn't get a deal on these billboards that maybe Trump thought this originally, and then he just picked him up, you know, at a garage sale?
No. Cheryl, thank you. I appreciate it.
Want to talk to Dustin real quick,
yeah, sure.
Then we'll take a break.
All right.
Hey, Dustin.
Good afternoon.
What do you think of this? Make America white again, Dustin.
That's a bold statement. If you ask me.
I'm with you.
To say something like that is an insult, not only to the indigenous people of the country, it's an insult to, you know, all great Americans. Because if you look at it, technically, we're all immigrants. If you weren't here from day one, meaning if you weren't the indigenous people of this land, we're all immigrants.
Right.
So it's one big melting pot. The best thing we can all do is get along, look out for one another. You ever heard the term, it takes a village to raise one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that should be on the billboard. It takes a village to raise our children or something or other. But to make a statement like that is an insult, not only to myself, not only to, you know, other Americans. It's also an insult to indigenous people. So maybe he should have thought about that before he said something.
Although I bet he wins.
Do you think so?
I don't know. What is right with this world anymore? Some of the things, honestly, Donald Trump has said, and he still keeps moving forward in the polls, although he's sliding a little, isn't he?
A little bit. Just a little. Justin, thank you for the call.
Thank you, Dustin.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Was it Dustin or Justin? I don't have my glasses on.
Maybe you should wear them.
Dustin and Justin.
We have to take a break. 312-981-7200. Let's make this radio show great again.
Yes. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. You were telling us about this guy running for Congress in
Rick Tyler.
Tennessee.
Correct.
And his campaign slogan and billboards.
Make America white again. People are questioning them. Saying, that's kind of racist, isn't it? That phrase, make America white again, and you show a bunch of white people smiling and doing white people stuff. He doesn't see it.
And his defense was he wanted it to go back in time to how it was when, like, Ozzie and Harriet were on.
The 1960s, yeah.
Well, Susie, the 60s weren't that innocent, were they?
No, they were not that innocent. Actually, the guy reminds me of Hitler because he wanted Aryan white race. But this, you know, and that was crazy, and we all know what a demon he was, the devil. But in the 60s, we had Martin Luther King assassination, John F. Kennedy, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers. You can go on and on and on. It doesn't make sense.
Well,
it wasn't innocent. It was shocking.
But, Susie, his view of the 60s, he wants it to be like that idyllic view that only happened on television with Ozzie and Harriet and with Leave It to Beaver, where there were no real problems, not the realistic
60s. No one's life was like that television show.
TV wasn't real then. I mean,
right.
He had twin beds. I mean, it was ridiculous. The wife wore an apron and stayed in the kitchen, and
was there when the kids came home from school. I mean, I don't know. My mother was a career person. I grew up then. It doesn't make sense. None of it does. I mean, we all want to have the perfect family, but there's no one that ever had the perfect family, even if we thought we did.
And if they say they have a perfect family, they're lying. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Everybody had their issues growing up, and and we all make our viewpoint from where we come from, but this man is, he should be taken away and put in an asylum or something. I mean, that's going so way back. He might as well be in the Civil War.
Right. I know.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Thank you, Susie. We appreciate you calling. Don has something he'd like to add. Hi, Don.
Hey. I haven't seen the billboard, but the way you describe it, it's just got a lot of people on there smiling and everything. And I think we're misinterpreting the billboard.
What do you think it means?
I think he's probably a dentist. He's advocating dentistry.
Maybe. That makes more sense. If that's what he's advocating, I am on his side. Anything else, I'm not.
So make your smile white again? Is that, you know, we want to see teeth?
That's what my dentist always tells me.
That's a good dentist.
He should be running for the mayor of Flossmore then.
Wee!
Thanks, Don. Have a good day.
Well, I don't know why these people are in the real world.
Yeah.
I'm serious. You read some of these stories, and it's like, this is really happening now and today.
Isn't that the strangest thing is that it is. It's current. Like, you hear a story like this, and you go, boy, how long ago was that somebody had that kind of an idea? But it's right now.
That is freaking scary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All right, we need to take a quick break, and more show coming your way. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. 720 WGN. You guys want to take your conversation down the air?
No. Brian Noonan stopped in.
Is he in for Roe?
No, he's not. But we're not the first people to ask him that.
Well,
he just stopped in.
I anytime I'm in the city.
You know what this reminds me of? Sometimes on The Tonight Show, Johnny Carson would have a guest and Bob Hope would just show up.
That's me.
Brian Noonan is our generation's Bob Hope.
Yes, I'm actually heading overseas to entertain the troops with Brooke
Joey
Shields.
Heatherton.
And Joey Heatherton's coming.
It's going to be a fun show.
I don't like to talk about Joey Heatherton. We had a thing and it went badly, but I
business.
Still keep her on the show because I'm a professional.
How about that?
She was so smoking hot, wasn't she?
Was.
Girl named Joey, too.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That added to the hotness.
Yeah.
Because she had a guy name.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it was that weird juxtaposition of
and
wow.
Guy hair.
Yeah, kind of. A
no,
little
she
bit.
Didn't.
She did have the Dorothy Hamill kind of pixie
no.
Shaggy
hair. That was a shag haircut.
Really? I think it was very short hair.
A lot of times, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess it was the shag without the bottom part.
Right, right.
It wasn't
right.
A boy haircut.
Wow. She didn't have bottom parts? I got confused.
Be
all
honest,
of a sudden.
Brian Noonan, you came in to tell Bill his glasses. Look at his.
They're askew. They're very askew.
Completely diagonal on his face.
Do you think it's his ears and not his glasses? Because sometimes I'll look and I go, oh, my glasses are crooked. It's my head. So maybe it's Bill's head is a little off.
They're not always like that. I think you do it just to drive me nuts.
You know what it is? Remember on Cartoon Town with Bill Jackson when he would build the blob? And there were just parts of a guy's face he would just throw on at random. That's kind of how
so
my face is.
So you just threw the glasses on.
Glasses, nose,
they
ears,
stick.
Whatever sticks.
Okay, since we're all a little disjointed right now, I just looked her up. She's 71 years old, Joey Heatherton.
Joey
right?
Heatherton
Love
is.
Her.
Yep.
Wow.
Every 4th of July, she and myself and Connie Stevens get together and we have a good time.
Is that
we just
right?
Have a little picnic. Yep.
What is Joey like? A little bratwurst? Is she vegan? She strikes me as being vegan.
She eats a little healthy, but she finds something.
She'll still throw a dog down if you want.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Listen, I don't know.
We need to take a break. Brian,
no,
fun
listen,
to see you.
I just wanted to, anytime I'm in the city between whatever time, 10 and
whatever
3.
Time.
No, because it's, well, you guys take a break. I don't come in during noon to 1.
Right.
I don't come in during noon
you
to 1.
Damn right you don't.
Yeah, because Bertrand won't let you in.
Padlocks the door to the studio.
I come in with a clipboard and go, yes, I'm here to talk about business. He doesn't buy it for a second. But you guys, I know I could come in. Joey Heatherton might pop up.
Sure.
Who knows? Bill's head being crooked.
That's fine.
You never know what
whatever
you're talking
happens.
That's what
pleasure.
We do here. Yeah. That's what we do.
I know it. Right.
So you're not in for Roe.
I'm not in for Roe. I'll be in for Roe the week of July 4th, that entire week.
All right.
So if you guys are around, you're probably
I'll
off
be in Nashville.
That week.
You're here early, just so you know.
I like to prep, Steve. It's called show prep. I'm a professional. like to get in a couple weeks early, lay down the groundwork for the big show.
I'd like, you know how you always had the house that the kids would always go hang out when you're growing? I'd like this show
this
to
be the
that.
House. I like
that. When anyone's in town, you know, here
by.
At the station, just come in yep. and say hello.
Well, I was, my timing was off. I was hoping I would come in while you were in the news so I wouldn't bother anybody.
You're fine.
Thank you.
Do you want some high C?
I would like a juice pouch for the road.
We can do that for you.
Well, let's do some news right now. It's 2:30, and this is sponsored by CME Group. Here's Steve Bertrand. Does anyone remember laughter?
Yes.
Yes. The trial, the rock and roll trial of the century out in Los Angeles. ABC News correspondent Jason Nathanson was there. When the verdict was handed down, what is the verdict?
Does this mean I never have to listen to Stairway to Heaven again?
This is the last time, Jason.
That is one of their worst songs, if you want to know the honest to God truth.
Do you think it is? Yeah.
It is not. Certainly not one of their best. It's the most familiar, yes.
Yeah.
But hardly.
By the time it gets going, I really, like halfway through, I really like it. But, you know, leading up to that, it's kind of, I don't like to, and the beginning is what was at issue here. Whether the beginning was ripped off from the song Taurus by the band Spirit.
Yeah.
And in the end, Zeppelin was victorious.
Yes.
They did not steal this song from, well, okay, so a couple of things. The jury ruled on several different motions. There were four of them. They said that Page and Plant did have access to the song, meaning they were around Spirit. They heard the song before they wrote Stairway to Heaven. So the jury says yes. So that's one of the key things that they had to find was their access. The jury says yes, there was access. But when it comes to the musical technicalities of the songs being the same, the jury said, nope, not legally the same. That's where we find that they're different, and Zeppelin did not infringe on the copyright of Taurus.
So, Jason, you know, we talked to you about the trial yesterday and the conclusion, the verdict has finally been reached. This means that no money will change hands as a result of this?
No money will change hands. No credit will change hands. Nothing will happen. Zeppelin said in a statement that they're glad this finally puts to rest the origin, how it was written, and there's going to be no. I mean, there could be an appeal. I talked to the attorney, Francis Malfoy, after about that, and he said they're thinking about it. He didn't say immediately yes. You know, in a lot of cases like this, immediately the other side will say, oh, we're going to appeal. He did not say that. So I don't know if that's actually going to happen. But his big issue after court was that the jury never actually heard the recording of the song Taurus by Spirit. They heard the sheet music of it. They heard somebody play the sheet music of it, but they never heard the actual recording as they did the actual recording of Stairway. And he thinks that the jury didn't get all the information because of that.
Why didn't they get to hear it? That seems like it would be an integral part of the case.
It is, but it's obscure because the song was in 1967, and because of copyright law, they didn't copyright the actual performance of it.
Oh.
Or actually, I don't think they could have then. They could only copyright the sheet music of it, which is what is in the Library of Congress.
I have to tell you, I thought Zeppelin was going to lose this one because it sounded very similar. And when Robin Thicke was sued by the estate of Marvin Gaye, I thought that changed things with Blurred Lines. Like, from now on, if somebody says something, they're going to win.
And that's one of the reasons that this suit was brought, and it was brought so long after. And, you know, Randy California, the guy who actually wrote the song, he never did it himself. And then he died, and then the suit was brought by his estate. But once that Blurred Lines verdict came in, I think the lawyers here in this case said, well, we've got a case that's very similar that I think we could win just as easily. And they took it to court, and unfortunately they didn't, though.
Did they mention at all that Randy California drowned while saving his son at a beach in Hawaii in 1997? Was that brought up in...
I believe that was brought up briefly and objected to by the defense.
Because it has nothing to do with it.
It's not material. Well, there was a whole kind of side issue that was brought up that was kind of interesting about who actually has the right to this estate. Because the guy who sued on behalf, who's the trustee of the estate, is some guy who was a rock journalist who became friends with Randy California and then kind of became, I don't want to say weaseled his way into the estate.
But it's not his family.
It's not his family. He became friends with Randy California's wife and all these people, and they said, hey, you know the estate of everything better than anybody. You should be the trustee of the estate. But Randy California had a son, and that son is not the trustee to the estate, and there was some dispute over who actually has the rightful claim to the estate.
Well, it's a good day in my rock and roll heaven. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
And a lot of people here, you know, there was one fan. His name is Blue Boy. He's been here at 5 a.m. every day. He has this bright turquoise goatee. He's an aging kind of rocker guy. He's a huge fan of Zeppelin and Spirit. And he told me this whole thing has been tearing him apart.
Oh, no.
Apart.
No sleep for Blue Boy?
He brought the album covers of both of them.
Hoping to get him autographed.
You can see a picture on my Twitter feed, at ABC News Jason. If you want to see Blue Boy and the kind of people who are at this trial every day, go check it out.
I would like to know if you did an artist rendering of Blue Boy as you did of Page and Plant that was also up on your Twitter page.
I did not, because the actual courtroom artist did.
Oh,
woman
even
who's
better.
Been doing this for 30 years. She did it, and it was so much better than anything I could have done. But I will tell you, I am wearing my official credential. One of the lawyers here, who's been following the case the whole time, made us all "I Survived the Led Zeppelin Trial" and it's hanging around my neck right now. You can also see a picture of that if you want.
Jason, if this trial becomes a made-for-TV movie, will Cuba Gooding Jr. play Page Plant or both of them, do you think?
That is a fantastic question, one I will try to get to the bottom
of. Please do.
Who will John Travolta play, though?
Ah, even better.
I'm going Plant for that one.
You think so? Yeah, he'd be good.
Put a wig on him.
Yeah.
I was thinking Blue Boy, but if you guys want,
good.
Thank you so much, Jason. This is good news because really, I didn't think Zeppelin ripped off that song. Maybe other songs, but not that particular one.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Jason. Jason Nathanson, ABC News correspondent, covering the trial of the century. Would you agree?
Rock and roll
trial. Rock and roll
trial
of the century, for sure.
But now, do you remember when this whole plagiarism, the first time I was familiar with it was you had the Chiffon song, "He's So Fine."
He's so fine.
And then you had George Harrison with "My Sweet Lord."
My sweet lord.
Doolang, doolang, doolang. Doolang.
It's the similar.
Same thing. He lost.
It's pretty similar.
George Harrison lost to the Chiffons. And he said that perhaps maybe he had heard it and subliminally kind of lifted it.
Oh, wow.
I'm so shocked. It's such a small bit of the song, though. I don't know. Maybe it's because it's the chorus, their hook, or whatever, but it's...
It's the same thing.
Bit, yeah, I don't know.
Now, you're a musician, though. I mean, it's used differently.
Everything that's been written is going to be ripped off at one point. I'm fairly certain of it. It's just going to happen. It's, you know.
What was this? Remember there was a commercial where they would sing a song, "Come Back to Jamaica," and everybody kept saying, well, that's ripped off from John Lennon, but I can't remember what John Lennon song it was.
This is Christmas, to Jamaica, wasn't it?
Yeah, but if it was that one, it would have been the other way. Maybe so that which came first in that?
I can't. The chicken.
The chicken came first. That's right.
I'll look that up.
But I remember a lot of people drawing that comparison, going, "Well, that's the exact same song," and it was very similar.
I don't remember that one, but now that you bring that up,
it
was
exactly. Yeah, it's "Come Back to Jamaica" and "Happy Christmas."
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is Christmas.
"Come Back to Jamaica." It's kind of the same.
You sing that one, and I'll sing.
No. Because people would rip it off and put it on the internet and make a lot of money.
Did they win anything? Did it ever go to trial?
I don't know that it went to trial. I don't remember it being in trial. Was it, Kevin? Do you know?
Come back to Jamaica.
Come back to gentility.
Come back.
What's old is what's new.
Come back to our beauty.
Come back to the big bamboo.
This is definitely ripped off.
Come back.
It is very similar, isn't it?
I love Jamaica. Come back for our
hospitality.
I'm not even
hospitality.
Gonna say. Yeah.
Come back for our bounty.
A bounty.
This is the Christmas song. It is.
The only thing missing is Yoko.
Maybe that's for the
better. I like this one better.
All right, a break. More show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Psycho Killer Talking Heads, who has lifted that?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. Who has?
I just was throwing it out.
Has somebody?
Some listener has texted something, which I completely forgot about. John Fogerty, of course, of Creedence Clearwater Revival fame. He had to go. He wrote all their hits: "Proud Mary," "Sweet Hitch a Hike," all these ones. And then he had to go to this crazy lawsuit plagiarism case where he was accused of stealing his own riff.
Right. He wrote the songs and then got accused of
because
writing
of a record
a song too similar
record label rift.
Oh, so he was with one record label and wrote a song, but then when he was with another label, he had a similar song.
And you know the songs. Run Through the Jungle was an old Creedence song, which is awesome. It was featured in a bunch of movies.
Yeah.
And his 85 solo song, Old Man, The Old Main Down the Road.
Yeah, I know that song.
He took his own riff, but the record label said, you know, that's plagiarism.
Well,
and he's like, but I'm stealing from me. How is that plagiarism? And it went to court. He won the case, but then he had to jump through further legal hoops to win back the $1.35 million in costs.
Oh, no.
That's ridiculous.
Well, it's considered, I guess, intellectual property of whichever record label he at first, whatever song came first, it almost belongs to them.
Well, he did sell the rights to his old material because that's what you did when you wanted to make money when he was back in Creedence, and that's what happened. But that, I mean, that just seems like a completely frivolous lawsuit.
To
it's
rip
the
yourself
same
off?
Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's moved on, but so what? What's happened to Kesha? Didn't she, like, quit her, or Sony wouldn't let her out of her record deal or something? She was claiming
she
abuse or
guy,
something.
Called himself a doctor. I don't know if he was actually a doctor.
A doctor of what?
Don't want to know. You don't want to know.
Because I haven't heard
but I don't know
her.
Where that stands right now.
It's a good thing we're not in the rock and roll biz.
I wouldn't know what to do. I would not know what to do. You know what we didn't have time to talk about today? And maybe we'll come in tomorrow and talk about it. I don't know. The woman in Texas who had surgery on her jaw. Do you know this story a little bit?
A little bit.
All right. A woman has surgery on her jaw. Keep in mind, she's a Texan. She lives in Texas. She's a mom. She's got three kids. And then, excuse me, when the surgery's over, the surgery was successful.
Which is the good news.
That's the good news. But then the news that may or may not be good, depending on your thoughts, is that now she has a British accent.
That's how it happened to Madonna.
Is that what happened?
She
is
went,
that what happened
yeah,
to her?
Yeah, because she's from, what, Rochester, Michigan?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, she must have gone in for some kind of procedure.
She started speaking with a British accent.
She totally did.
Jaw surgery has left a Texas woman with a British accent.
Hello.
It's a... No, a British accent, not a parrot accent.
No, but her jaw, she had jaw surgery.
Oh,
so it was wired for a little bit, I would imagine. So it's hard to hear her go, hello.
Hello.
So
hello.
Right. It would be more, right. Okay. It is a rare, I don't think they had to tell us that it was rare. I think we knew that it was rare. Well, that's what you get when you get jaw surgery, right? You start talking with a British accent. A rare neurological disorder that has the mother of three sounding like a character from Downton Abbey. CBS Houston reports that 6 months ago, Lisa Alamia underwent jaw surgery to correct an overbite, resulting in nerve damage that led to a condition known as foreign accent syndrome.
Oh, that's a creative name.
Right.
Who came up with that?
Took them a long time to think of that. So let's go with foreign accent syndrome. Now chatting with strangers in her town of Rosenberg, Texas is no simple matter. Alamia says, people who don't know me, they're like, hey, where are you from? Except she said it with a British accent. They're like, hey, where are you from?
Hey, y'all.
Hey, y'all. Where are you from, mate? Governor?
When she
talks to the governor, nobody thinks anything different. But when it's somebody who's not the governor, then they go, hey, what are you talking about?
Isn't mate Australian?
Yes, sometimes. Although it's both. Mate is both. Alamia says, should I do it with a British accent or without?
Sure.
All right. She answers, I'm from Rosenberg, and they're like, what is that? And I'm like, right, here in Rosenberg, and you're from here, hey, how do you talk like that? So that's where the story comes up.
Show me your drawings.
Show me your drawings.
That's got to be really out of place in Texas, though.
It is. I saw an interview with this woman last night on one of the news shows, and, you know, all of her kids talk with a Texan accent, and she says she had that accent just up until the surgery. So what could possibly happen to your brain? Like she,
well, the nerve damage, and I know that my mom had a tooth pulled at one point in her teething career.
Yeah.
And they pulled out the lining of her sinus.
Oh, no.
By mistake. And
so she touched with a French accent. Right?
No.
Depending on what part of your...
But there are a ton of nerves all connected and all around there that lead to your brain. My only question is why... I could see where you wouldn't be able to speak, but why would it just change the dialect? Or,
right.
That seems weird to me. But since it's foreign accent syndrome, that explains it all.
Right. If it was something else.
Hello, this is Judy.
Hello, Judy.
You see what I mean?
Okay, wait. I'm laughing so hard up here. Really? Is this from The Onion?
No.
Come on.
He gets
from CBS
duped
News
every once in a while.
CBS News is real.
It's ridiculous.
Kind of.
But again, I could see where you'd lose your ability to talk, which would be horrible.
That would make sense, but it would be horrible.
But in a way, this isn't that bad, but this can't be real. Is there an accent center in your brain? Yeah, this is the French. This is the Italian.
I wonder.
That's what I mean. It seems...
Like, was she the kind of woman who sometimes pretended to have a British accent, so it just kind of, she goes, oh, I know how to do a British accent. I'll just talk like that all the time. Why? I don't understand what part of your brain would go, well, you've got some nerve damage in your brain, so from now on, you got to talk like Eliza Doolittle. It wouldn't make any sense, would it?
Oh, I ain't dirty.
Right.
I used to talk like her.
We've all done fake British accents.
I hope it doesn't happen to me.
Judy, I hope it doesn't.
Why didn't her Texan accent just get worse? Why didn't that happen?
That makes more sense, doesn't it? That she'd have a more pronounced Texan accent.
Right, or just no accent at all.
Oh, maybe.
Because, you know, you are where you live, so if it just went
right,
like a reboot.
Right.
Oh, she wasn't Canadian.
Right.
But if it just went back to just no accent at all, because isn't that kind of a learned thing? If you're from Texas,
yeah,
you start
sure.
picking that up.
Right.
So if it was like a reset, why was there no accent?
Know.
Why going British?
I don't understand.
Are there any cases where people get Chicago accents?
The super fans.
Right.
Them Z's and Do's?
Right.
That's
if you're in England and you have the same surgery, that's how you end up sounding.
There was some commercial, too, which I'm sorry. I don't sound like Chicago, but you can tell I'm from Chicago.
Sure,
people say
of course.
I don't hear an accent. I think we here in Chicago have a lack of accent.
All right.
And then everybody else has the different business.
But I think depending on where you're from, that's what your belief is, right? Like
I'm
maybe
from Brookfield.
Well, no, but I'm saying if you're from parts of the country that have what we perceive to be accents, like Brooklyn or Philadelphia or parts of California where they'd have like a beach sound to them. Like they probably think they don't have an accent, but to us they do, right?
Well, I did some voice work for a radio station in California, and I said classic rock, and they said you're too classic. They don't say classic, so I had to go classic rock.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there is a different type of thing, but it's not because I had jaw surgery.
Well, doctors are baffled.
So are we.
Resting on a steady diet of fish and chips until it gets better. So we'll find out what happens. We'll take a quick break and find out what's coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.